Oh, God, like I'm pure God, the weekend's here.
There aren't going to be any bears or bugs or anything like that. It's going to be a blast. I mean, what could possibly happen with all us college students at the lake on a weekend trip?
Jenny said you were the athletic one. You're not into girl stuff. Real butch type.
Ready? Okay. A-W-E-S-U-M-E. We're awesome. We're awesome. Totally. Totally. Totally.
I want to understand. Please, just put the knife down.
No!
Please.
Why does everyone want to ruin everything? Why don't you just leave me the fuck alone?
Hi, this is Hazel Tanksy from Voodoo Massacre, and you are listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues. And that was the immortal Hazel Tankersley, who is the star of many of Nathan's films. Is Hazel going to be making an appearance in The Night Before Easter?
No, I think she's retired.
Oh, is she? Okay, fair enough. After an illustrious career. So... But yes, welcome back. We are up to episode 70, and this time we'll be slightly less double entendres perhaps than our 69th episode, but you never know. We'll see what comes, as it were. But this time we are covering Nathan's pick, which is Crinoline Head, which actually is a film that I'd never seen before. So it was good to actually catch something that's, you know, brand new as far as seeing that. So... But without further ado, I introduce you to my fellow head cases. So, Joseph, how are you doing?
I am good. I am good. I am totally good.
Yes, which I think I even get that reference this time because that's from the film, isn't it?
Rather well, she says awesome, but
yeah.
I don't like the word awesome.
Okay.
Well, did you all know that she misspelled it?
Yes.
Okay.
But yes, we shall be covering
Crinoline Head. She left out the queue. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yes, it's actually a nice blue sky out there today, unlike it's just been shitting down with rain for the last 3 months.
Blue skies, all that I see. Sorry.
That's all right.
I'm in a festive mood this morning.
Oh, that's good. Well,
I just woke up.
Okay. Happy campers all round. How about you, Eric? Are you in a festive mood?
I'm totally awesome.
Yes,
totally.
We know you are. We know you are. So, yes, well, that probably gives you an indication of the kind of dialogue. You heard some of that on the introduction to Crinoline Head. So I think it's going to be quite a fun one to talk about. And also, Nathan, you spoke with Tommy Fairclough, didn't you? The man behind the camera and in front of the camera in Crinoline Head. And it's about 30, half an hour, isn't it, interview?
32 minutes long.
Yes. So if you want to know how Crinoline Head came together and also the background of the movie, then that's coming up a little bit later. But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about what we've been watching recently. Joseph, what have you been watching?
Well, I've watched a couple of things. I watched a movie called Skinwalker Ranch. And it has John Grease from Napoleon Dynamite and Lost, and real genius. He's basically this farmer whose son wanders out into this pasture. It's a found footage movie, by the way, sort of a documentary slash found footage film. But anyway, he's this farmer whose son wanders out into this pasture like one evening, and he just disappears, and this... student research team who are doing a documentary on this weird happening at this ranch show up to, you know, document what happened that night and to document all the strange goings on. And basically they get there and it's like your typical found footage film. And, you know, they see a lot of weird things. And I was kind of underwhelmed. I read a glowing review on the Roger Ebert site of all sites. It wasn't actually written by Roger Ebert, obviously, but they gave it a fair review. So I was like, well, you know, I'll check it out. But I was a little underwhelmed. I mean, I know this is going to shock a little people, but I'm kind of getting tired of found footage films now. Yeah. Jeez. I mean, I'd still like them, but I'm just waiting for another one, you know, to kind of, you know, wow me. I haven't had that experience in a while, but this one had some good acting.
It's like Justin getting fed up of red wine.
Yeah. Well, that's never going to happen.
Susie and the Banshees.
Yeah, that's never going to happen either.
Yeah. This one had some, you know, good acting and some pretty decent effects, but everything it boiled down to at the end, I was just like, that's it. So, yeah, see it for some decent acting and some decent effects, but otherwise it's just kind of forgettable.
Okay. Yeah, it's not one that I have seen. And talking of found footage or this type of movie, all those rumors are resurfacing about the Friday the 13th new movie being found footage. Have you been hearing about that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they just resurfaced a few weeks ago, and people are just kind of in an uproar. And I don't care. I mean, if they keep it in Crystal Lake and he just kills people, I don't care if they use a gimmick. I mean, I'll watch it. It sounds decent enough.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I can't really see how they can do it, but I mean, I can. I guess they up something like My Little Lie or even Halloween Resurrection, couldn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I imagine it'd be quite shitty. But who knows? It'd be cheap to make, I'm sure, Sean. I'm sure that's part of the appeal. So, you said you saw something else as well?
Yes, we went to Grant's on Friday, and I watched Dead of Night, a.k.a. The Lighthouse.
Mm.
And I'd never seen it before. And I have to give this film a very high rating for, you know, atmosphere and cinematography. And I mean, some of the shots in this movie are just so, oh man, they're so good. And it's just like, I'm watching him like, wow, I really want to try to, you know, do stuff like that in my movie. I mean, these people just did such a good job. The one scene where the guy's hiding in the bathroom and he's waiting for the killer to leave and he accidentally knocks the can of hairspray into the floor and it rolls all the way across the floor and it like teeters on the edge of the steps and the killer's walking down the steps and they have that overhead shot and it's really suspenseful and it's really well shot. And I was like, wow, this is great. And you know, for that, I really liked it, but I had a little problem with it. I was a little underwhelmed with, I guess it was the characters. For one, it's like, I applaud them for having this group of prisoners, you know, they kind of crash on this island with a killer. I applaud them for not making anyone unlikable, but usually because prisoners are kind of like mean and, you know, cruel, but these are actually, you know, nice people, you know, that you kind of, you know, they're not yelling or anything. But the problem is that they're all so kind of bland and you don't really know their names and it's kind of hard to follow them. But other than that, I really like this film a lot for the, you know, for the atmosphere. And it really reminded me of a 70s, you know, almost like a thriller episode from like Brian Clemens or something. So, more than a marginal thumbs up. But I wish I kind of could have got behind the characters a little more. I wish I had known more of their names and who they were and stuff. But other than that, yeah, seek this one out. It's from 96 or 97, I think, maybe?
Well, 99. 99, I think.
Yeah, okay.
But, yeah, it's a great movie. Great movie for a long time. I think we're getting... Are we getting a few sound issues? Or are we...
Mm-hmm. It could possibly have been on my end. I have animals here, and I'm trying to shoo them away.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not that sound issues. I was kind of, like, repeating things.
Oh.
But, Has anyone, Nathan and Eric, have you seen Lighthouse?
No, not yet. It's what I've been dying to see, though, for 14 years.
I'm in a complete agreement with Joseph. Mm. I thought it was style over substance, I guess, but the style was more than enough to get me to really enjoy it.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, no, it's definitely at least given me the impetus to go back and watch it again, so... So, yeah, great stuff. And I did forget to say we have something else coming up as well, which I completely slipped my mind, but it should be another Inga-inducing quiz this time.
Yeah, Justin.
I think there's only one Inga on this podcast.
You're so going to mortify yourself again.
I very much doubt it. But Nathan is going to be twisting our minds, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay. And so what have you been watching, Nathan?
Well, aside from that one, I really haven't watched much. The other night I watched Blood Lake, which I quite enjoyed, and I can't wait to, you know, have you guys watch as well.
Oh, God.
I have never had the pleasure.
Neither have I.
Oh, God.
Mm. You see, and you guys should be happy I'm introducing you to all of these new movies.
Well, it remains to be seen. We were happy to be introduced to Crinoline here, doesn't it, Nathan?
Oh, yeah, it does.
Yeah. So what did you think of Blood Lake? Isn't it? Was it made by Troma or just released by them?
Shot on video.
Nice. It was just released by Troma. It wasn't made by them.
Mm. But it was shot on video, was it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's about 30 minutes of slasher footage, about 30 minutes of a group of friends playing quarters, and about 30 minutes of them skiing.
Right. It sounds thrilling.
It does.
So we've got that coming up at some point as one of your picks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're actually...
You know what? It may be the double bill I put with it and Terratentacular, since they're both around a lake.
Yikes.
I'll be getting my colostomy bag emptied that day.
Well, actually, thankfully, we're actually going to be, perhaps thankfully, we're going to be starting doing some of the listener picks. And we'll be announcing the first one at the end of the show. So stick around to the round right to the end, and we'll let you know what we're covering in 2 weeks' time. And it's something that one of you out there pledged some money towards the night before Easter. So that's coming up a little bit later. But Eric, what have you been watching?
Okay, well, when we did the last podcast, I was venturing out again to the horror thong. And I went to see the remake of Patrick was the first one that evening, which, of course, is the tale of a telekinetic coma patient who begins manipulating those around him so he can, you know, his goal ultimately is to cop off with his nurse fancies. And it follows the plot of the original Richard Franklin movie very closely indeed. It's one that is a proper remake as opposed to a reimagining. So a lot of people didn't like it for that reason, because it was a bit too faithful and it offers nothing new. I did enjoy it, though, because I hadn't seen the original Patrick for quite a while. It's very silly in parts, and it gets sillier as it goes on. And it features a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see six coma patients suddenly sitting up bolt upright and chanting, "Patrick wants his hand job, Patrick wants his hand job." Not something you'd see every day in a film or hear. It's directed by Mark Hartley, who did the rather brilliant documentary Not Quite Hollywood, which was about Australian exploitation cinema. Hmm. And it's got a sort of A-list cast, I suppose. It's got Charles Dance and Rachel Griffiths in it. So I enjoyed it. It didn't go down too well with a lot of the people in the audience, though, I have to say.
Okay.
Following up from that, I saw Haunter, which... I thought of you, Justin, as this movie unfolds, because the majority of the film has this lead actress, Abigail Breslin, in a Susie and the Banshees t-shirt, because she plays a teenager who was murdered in 1985. And she lives in this sort of Groundhog Day existence where she relives the same day over and over again. And only she's the only one member of her family of four who realizes that they're dead. The rest of them just... are completely unaware. And so it has a kind of Twilight Zone vibe. And then the film develops in such a way that she has to reach out to the people who are currently living in the house in 2013 and warn them of the imminent danger and of, you know, to try and stop them being killed by the same serial killer that killed her family. So it's an interesting... It's not quite as good as the premise, the setup suggests, but... I thought it was quite interesting, had some great scenes in it. You'd love Abigail Breslin's bedroom in it. It's covered with posters of the Smiths and Joy Division and Depeche Mode, Susie and the Banshees, David Bowie. She's got great taste in music, obviously, this girl. And then, of course, over the end credits, we get The Killing Jar from Susie, which is one of my favourite singles. How does that rate as a Banshee-et, or whatever you're called, Justin?
A Banshee-et.
The Killing Jar, would it be in the top 10, top 20 favourite songs?
No? Not entirely sure, but Peep Show's a great album. Mm. So, yes, I'm looking forward to seeing that.
It's directed by Vincenzo Natali, or whatever way you pronounce his name, who did Cube, and more recently did Splice, which had a good sort of opening 30 minutes and then petered out. And I suppose that's kind of similar to Haunter, but I would recommend watching it. The one that did surprise me, though, was an Austrian film I saw called The Station. I don't know if anyone's heard that. It's set in the German Alps, where a bunch of scientists are analyzing the effects of global warming on the snow-capped mountains. And what happens is that the melting snow unleashes this long dormant red substance that causes mutations in any creature that ingests it. So you get sort of weird hybrids of woodlouse and a fox attacking the outpost, and you get all kinds of strange, gruesome mutant critters and humans as well. So it's very like The Thing, and it has an element of The Mist in it as well. But it was highly entertaining, and it's populated with sort of older, middle-aged characters, as opposed to annoying airbrush 20-somethings, you know, clogging up the screen with their anonymous faces. And many people thought this was the highlight of the festival in terms of the new films that were released, although it does have a ridiculous coda at the end that was totally unnecessary. But yeah, I was really taken aback by how good it was, because it was one of the films I went to just to fill a gap, you know, between two other films I wanted to see. And it turned out to be one of the best. It's called The Station.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, well, I've not heard of that one, but that's the whole point of the horror thought,
yeah,
isn't it? So
that sounds good. I want to see that.
But and then there was retro screenings of Life Force, Christine, and Videodrome, which were excellent, and they would have been my highlights for me. So,
were they on film or were they digital?
No, they're projected digitally, but no, they look darn good, I have to say.
Cool, excellent. Great. Well, thank you, Eric. Is there anything else you wanted to mention, or is that?
No, I'll mention. There's probably a few more from the festival, but I'll mention them on the next podcast.
Yeah. Okay, great stuff. With Halloween coming up and having gone, I've watched very few horror movies. In fact, just ended up rewatching World War Z again with some friends who came around for Halloween. So the only other thing I saw of note, and it's not really a horror movie, was Side Effects, which is kind of a thriller. With Rooney Mara, who was in the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, and she was very rude about that, as well as the Girl with Dragon Tattoo remake. Jude Law and Catherine Zeta-Jones and Channing Tatum, I think. Has anyone else seen that?
What was, remind me of the title?
Side Effects.
What year is it from?
It's this year. So.
All right, no, I haven't seen it then, definitely.
No, or Cider Effects, as the West Country remake would be. But it was because I won't give anything away, really, apart from the premise. It's one of those films that just suddenly halfway through lurches in a twist that I didn't see coming at all. But it's a story of a woman who's really, really depressed, and after her husband out of prison, and she's put on experimental drugs for depression, and it has unforeseen side effects, basically. And I thought it was quite clever for a mainstream thriller. It was quite good, and there's a little bit of, there's not a slasher movie at all by any stretch, but there's a very bloody scene about halfway through. So that's kind of a, I would recommend that perhaps. So right.
Oh
yes,
I forgot about one I wanted to mention. Was I watched American Mary, and I think you've seen it, Justin.
I have, yes. Is that the Soska sisters? Is it them? Yeah,
it is. Where the lead character is basically doing like underground like body modification surgeries.
Mm.
I really liked it. I thought it was really interesting and original. The only thing that I was a bit let down by was the ending. It just felt like the ending was. It just felt like it belonged in a different film. Like, this movie was so weird, I almost wanted it to have a crazy, weird ending, too. But the ending seemed to go into typical thriller movie territory, I guess.
Mm.
But I still really liked it, though.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was very odd, wasn't it? But it was a really interesting film. Because didn't they make, was it Dead Hooker in a Trunk was their film before that? And aren't they're doing the sequel, bizarrely, to Hear No Evil or See No Evil, whichever one it was, the one with the wrestler.
Yeah, See No Evil. Yeah.
See No Evil.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they're doing the sequel to that. But
aren't they also involved in the upcoming all-women horror anthology? I think it's an anthology, or it might be something else, but I think they're it's XX. Okay. Are they involved in that, I think?
Yes, I think they are, yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, no, it's a film I'd like to watch again. I thought it was... I really liked the Betty Boop character in it.
I loved her.
Yeah. She was really good. So, good stuff. Well, we're probably... I'm just going to... if you're listening at home, I do apologise if this is sounding a bit like an 80s... It sounds like Duran Duran's Reflex video. I don't know if you can... So what we're going to do is, through the power of the internet, we're going to... let's see if we can get a better line. Right. Well, welcome back. Fingers crossed that we've got this sorted now. And but we're coming up for the game show, aren't we? The Slasher Movie Game Show. A bit of background music for you there. Nathan.
Yes.
What have you got in store for us this time?
Well, we have 6 rounds. Some of them have themes. Some of them are random. But I look forward to seeing if we have any Inga moments for this.
Okay, right. Well, do you want to take it away?
Okay, by random drawing, Justin, you're actually first.
Okay. I trust you, Nathan. You know that.
Okay. Would you like door number 1, door number 2, or door number 3?
Door number 2, please.
Okay, now this is one of my favorite categories, How Did They Die? Okay. So you know how this works. You just have to tell me how this character died.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, door number 2. Margie from Night Warning.
Margie from Night Warning. Well, that's the one with Susan Tyrrell, isn't it? And but I can't remember which the character Margie was. I'm trying to think of the death scenes in that. Well, it could be she could be the woman at the beginning, the sister who dies in a car crash. I'm going to go with that because I can't remember.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect.
Right.
We go to Joseph.
I think she's killed with a machete.
But how?
She's stabbed in the stomach.
That's it.
Oh, well
so
done.
So, point for Joseph.
Mm. Okay. And we watched that not too long ago.
All right, just a second here. Let me make sure I got my... All right, Joseph 1. Okay. Now, Joseph, would you like door number 1 or door number 3?
We'll go with number 1.
Okay. Alfred from Happy Birthday to Me.
Alfred is... let's see. I know he's the one who makes all the masks. Isn't he killed off screen?
No.
No.
Okay, then we go to Eric.
I thought he was killed off-screen as well. Doesn't he get his head chopped off and then it appears later in his...
I'm afraid not. Mm. Justin.
Doesn't he get garden shears shoved into his chest?
Yes. So that's 1 for Justin.
Mm. Hooray!
All right. Eric, that leaves you with door number 3.
Yes.
Katya from A Blade in the Dark.
Okay, the only murder that pops into mind from Blade in the Dark is the woman who gets the scissors in her hand and then she gets her throat slit and her paper or a plastic bag put over her head.
That's not that character, I'm afraid.
Oh, fuck.
Eric.
Eric.
Inga. Inga is back.
Yeah, and her name is Justin.
I bet that's just not right, is it? Okay.
Okay. Let's see. So that goes to Justin then.
Mm, I haven't seen Blade and Dark for a long time. Does she get her head chopped off and it rolls downstairs?
No.
No.
That's the stupidest answer I've ever heard.
Why?
That's just
Joseph.
She's killed with an X-Acto knife.
Yes.
Ooh.
What's an X-Acto knife?
It's a box
cutter. Like a little box cutter.
Stanley knife.
Yeah. Okay, well, we are moving on to round 2. Joseph has 2, Justin has 1, and Eric has 0.
Oh.
So, let's see. This one, we begin with Joseph. Okay, Joseph, door number 1, door number 2, or door number 3?
I'll go with number 2.
Okay. Now, this is called the singing round. I'm going to give you a song, and you don't have to know the whole song, but you have to sing at least a little bit of it. Joseph, you have to sing a little bit of Foosball from Nailgun Massacre.
We're living in the Bible Belt, whoa, and giving them hell.
Correct. Okay. Eric, door number one or door number three?
One, please.
Okay, you have to sing a little bit of Fall Break from The Mutilator.
Oh, I don't know how it goes. Fall Break, ooh, we're going on a fall break, ooh, I hope my head doesn't get chopped off, ooh, baby, baby, yeah, ooh.
I would like to give you a point for that, but I'm afraid I can't.
Oh. Well, I'll hear Justin sing anyway.
Yeah, Justin, can you sing a little bit of Fall Break?
I can't remember how it goes, apart from, I'm sure it goes, we're going on a fall break, ooh.
That's just what I just sang.
I know. But I'm sure that's how it goes, isn't it?
I just don't think that has the right tune, and I don't think there's a woohoo in there.
No. It was worth a try. There's usually a woohoo in songs.
Yes.
Can you sing it, Joseph?
Unfortunately, I don't think I can, so I'm just going to guess. We're going on a fall break.
I can't give it to you off of "We're Going on a Fall Break." It's not enough, I'm afraid.
I threw in a woohoo,
but that woohoo's not in the song.
Well, then I don't know.
Okay, well, unfortunately, no points for that round. Well, for that question, we still got Justin's. Okay, Justin, you automatically get door number three, and that means you have to sing a little bit of Annie's song about Paul from Halloween.
That's so easy.
I'm sorry. You guessed the door, Eric.
Is it sort of Paul forgot my keys, Louise, something like that, isn't it?
I'm afraid not.
I thought it was. Said. Doesn't she sing that about? Doesn't she say, "Oh, keys, Louise," something like that, isn't it?
Well, she does mention keys, but
she doesn't mention
exactly
Louise.
Not,
yeah,
you know, there's no Louise.
I think there was. She's under her breath.
Oh, okay.
No, they're not okay.
Oh, I mean, no, I'm. That's not enough to win. Get the point for the question, I'm afraid. Okay. So, I mean, it goes to Eric. So, or wait a minute. Have I got the? Let's see. I had it as Justin, then Joseph, then Eric. So, I guess it goes to Joseph, actually.
She's singing it to Paul. I don't remember.
Okay, Eric, if it's easy, then...
Yep. Oh, Paul, I give you all no keys, but please, my Paul, hear me call. Is that enough?
That's enough.
Thank you.
That is it. Okay, well, that was fun. I was looking forward to hearing your singing voices. Okay, at the end of round two, Joseph has three, Justin has one, and Eric has one.
Woo!
Woo-hoo!
Yeah. All right. So, Eric, round three, door number one, door number two, or door number three?
What's the theme of this round?
The theme of this round is I'm going to give you a short description from the back of a video box for a slasher movie, and you have to tell me what the movie they're talking about.
Oh, big number two, please.
Okay. As a family gathers together at their country home to celebrate Christmas in the American tradition, an evil force descends upon the house.
Oh, an evil force makes it sound supernatural. The only one I can think of, and it's not supernatural, Home for the Holidays?
No. Oh. Justin?
Is it Home Sweet Home?
No. Oh. Joseph?
Can you read it again?
As a family gathers together at their country home to celebrate Christmas in the American tradition, an evil force descends upon the house.
That's To All a Good Night.
No.
It's Bloodbeat, isn't it?
Santa Claus 2.
Yeah, Justin. Yeah. You got it right the second time around, but you can't get a point for that, I'm afraid. But it is Bloodbeat.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we go to Justin, door number one or door number three?
Number one, please.
Okay. The killer strikes and strikes again, each time leaving no clues, not even a footprint. The terror must come to an end, but just how do they stop a killer they can't see?
I don't recognize it. I mean, if it's a killer,
one.
Sorry, you do.
I know this one.
Okay. I think I know as well. Well, I can guess.
Well, all I'm going to say is Invisible Maniac.
I'm afraid not. Okay. Joseph?
Oh. Is it Scream?
Which one?
From 1981.
Okay. Yes, it is. You might have thought it was the Wes Craven one.
I was going to say Invisible Maniac as well.
There you go. So maybe we can be joint Ingers on this.
Joint show. Ingers, totally. Yeah.
Okay. Eric.
Yes.
A picture-perfect camping trip.
Oh, hang on. I've already done one. I think it's Joseph's turn.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
I guess because Joseph got that one right, I got mixed up. Mm-hmm. Okay, Joseph. A picture-perfect camping trip becomes a portrait in terror for six friends who are forced to land on a remote island.
Easy.
That's Humongous.
And I'm afraid not.
Ooh.
So, now we go to Eric.
Oh, can you repeat it again?
A picture-perfect camping trip becomes a portrait in terror for six friends who are forced to land on a remote island.
Six friends. The Slayer?
No. Justin?
Is it Hide and Go Shriek?
Now, that's an alternate title for this, isn't it? Because you're not talking about the Furniture Store movie, are you?
No. Or Hide and Shriek. I mean, then.
Yeah, that's so unfair.
No, it's so not. But it's obviously the one I was thinking of, isn't it? The one American Gothic.
Yeah, but
Gothic.
You said Hide and Go Shriek. There's no go in Hide and Shriek.
Yeah, but it's American Gothic, isn't it?
Okay, that's the title that I had here. I didn't know the title overseas, I guess.
That's the title in Britain, Hide and Shriek.
Yeah, not okay. Hide and Go Shriek, though, which is like you said. Yeah, I know.
But it's up to Nathan now, isn't it? Because that's right, though, wasn't it?
Give him half a point. I think he knew what I was talking about, so I'll give him a point for that.
Take that, okay. Inga.
Shut.
A finger to the
okay,
Inga.
So... Let's see, we did... this goes back to Justin. Okay. This is just a random round. So, door number one, door number two, or door number three?
Number one, please, again.
Okay. What VHS artwork features a blonde woman with an axe embedded in her chest?
The Prey.
Well, no.
Ooh.
I'm afraid not.
Oh, no, why don't you give him a second guess, though? Because that seems to be what we do on this quiz.
Oh, I know.
Why don't Justin have a second guess? Go on.
Well, actually, I do know what it is now, thinking about it. But I can't. I won't because it will spoil. If no one else gets it, I'll
give it. So, Joseph.
A blonde woman with an axe in her chest.
Yes.
Is it Silent Madness?
No. Mm-hmm. Eric.
Is it Fatal Games?
No. It is Justin. Do you know what?
Bloodstalkers.
Bloodstalkers.
Mm. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh,
well. Okay, Joseph. Door number two or door number three?
I will go with door number two.
Okay. In Graduation Day, where did Anne come from when she visited for Laura's funeral?
Where did she come from?
Yeah.
Are we talking geographically or?
Yes, geographically. She mentions a place that she came from.
Was it Los Angeles?
No, it's further away than that, I'm afraid. Okay, and then we go to Eric.
She's in the military, so. Oh. Has she come from Cuba?
No.
Why would
Justin?
Sorry?
You wouldn't get any American military in Cuba.
Eric. I don't know. I'm just making stuff up.
I thought he said Dubai.
Yeah. Was it, wasn't Japan, was it?
No. No.
No.
Okay. It was.
Oh, mortified for you, just.
Well, it does make more sense than Cuba, Eric.
It was.
What makes even more sense? Shut up. That's what makes more sense.
Oh, I think it's time for a...
One great Latin lover thinks he can just sit there looking like God's gift to women, you lousy fraud.
See, it's uncanny, isn't it? The similarities.
Where was Anne from?
Yes.
Guam.
Guam. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's
she
right.
She came all the way from Guam. All right, Eric, you have go number three by default.
Yeah.
What is the final line of dialogue uttered in My Bloody Valentine?
Doesn't the guy say, "Be my bloody Valentine," and laugh?
That's not the exact last line of dialogue, though. So we go to Justin.
Does he say, "Sarah, be my bloody Valentine"? Ha 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 ha.
No.
No.
He does say that, but he says something afterwards in kind of a sing-songy voice.
Oh, that's you should have said what was sung last.
That was, it's still words. Joseph.
Daddy's gone away. Harry Warden make you pay.
Okay, you wouldn't have gotten it if you hadn't done the laugh.
Okay.
Okay.
So we're very glad you remember the laugh. Okay, so we start this round with Joseph. This is our viewer questions. You know, because I did that contest.
Okay.
Questions our viewers came up with. Or viewers. Yeah, because they watch us. No, they are listeners.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have door number one, door number two, and door number three.
Who?
I'll go with number one.
Number one. Okay, this is from Michael Ferrari of Cinema Du Meat. He says, other than them both being very popular and now classic examples of slasher movies, in what way can you connect John Carpenter's Halloween and Friday the 13th?
Well, you can do that in many ways, but, oh, God. Can you be a little more specific, or is that all he said?
Well, that's all that he's got for the question, and it's apparently like a direct link. It's not like, you know, this person was in this movie with this person. It's not like a 6 degrees kind of thing.
The only thing I can think of would be that Friday the 13th was commissioned because of the success of Halloween.
I'm afraid that's not his answer here.
I know the answer.
Eric.
Laurie Strode has a sweater just like Mrs. Voorhees in her closet.
I'm afraid that's not correct either.
Oh.
Justin.
Are we talking the two original movies only?
Yes.
Okay. In which case, I don't know, I must admit. So, no, I can't think of anything that links them. Well, I mean, there's lots of things that link them, but not directly. Unless it was something to do... No, I can't think. He stumped us.
Yes, his answer was the state of New Jersey. Friday the 13th was shot in and around Blairstown, New Jersey, and Halloween's town of Haddonfield was named after writer-producer Deborah Hill's hometown of Haddonfield, New Jersey.
Oh, Michael Ferrari, that's too tenuous.
Yes.
I knew that you were going to say something about that.
Go for it, Inga.
I'll have words with him. I'll send him a private email after this.
Ooh.
Okay. All right, so now we're at you, Eric. Door number two or door number three?
Door number three.
Okay, this is from listener Nathan Johnson.
Oh.
And I had to come up with a question because Nigel never responded to me, so.
Nigel has gone to the States.
Okay, then that's why he didn't respond. Yeah. Okay, so door number three. In Home for the Holidays, 1972.
Yes.
What drink does Elizabeth Hall Morgan bring to Federica to help her sleep?
Oh. Is it warm milk?
And there's something else in there.
Brandy?
No, I'm sure she would like to have, but no.
Okay.
But since you got half of it right, you'll get half a point.
Woo-hoo!
Okay, so it goes to Justin.
Has it got honey in it as well?
Yeah, so you get the other half.
Oh.
Warm milk and honey.
That wouldn't make me sleep.
No. Okay, so now we're at Justin, who gets door number two. Okay. Justin, this question is from David Johnson.
Okay.
Any relation?
No. In addition to Friday the 13th, which 1980 slasher film also features a crazy Ralph?
Simpsons movie.
So 1980 or 1980s?
He has 1980.
80, crazy Ralph. Gosh. That's a good question, but I'm not sure if I know the answer off the top of my head. Ralph. Is there a Ralph in Prom Night? I don't think there is, but I'll just take a stab at that. No. Okay.
Joseph?
And this is from the year 1980. Ralph. Oh, boy. I'm just going to take a stab in the dark here. Ralph. And he is crazy.
He is crazy.
Boy. Is it I don't know, To All a Good Night?
Yes.
Are you serious?
The groundskeeper in To All a Good Night's named Ralph, and he's a weird.
I just totally guessed.
There's a Ralph in Bloody Moon as well.
Yeah, but he's not crazy. See, he just stood up anger, right?
Yeah.
There's a Ralph in,
which means he's crazy.
He's crazy. Yeah, he's crazy for standing up anger. Okay, yeah. I get that.
There's a Ralph on Google as well.
What?
I said there's probably a Ralph on Google.
Are you insinuating I Googled the answer?
No. Well, you didn't get it, did you?
No, well, I did. There's a Ralph on Bloody Moon, and that's from 1980.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Who went first that round?
Joseph.
Joseph did? Okay. So Eric gets to go first. Now, Eric, this – let me pull out my stopwatch because this is our lightning round. So okay. You have five questions and you have 15 seconds.
Okay. And I'll just pass if I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. If you don't know, just say pass and we'll go to the next one. Now, these are all taglines for slasher movies.
You know them. I would have won otherwise.
Door number one, two, or three?
Three, please.
Okay, now I'm going to start right after I read the first question.
Okay.
Now, number one, by sword, by pick, by axe, bye-bye.
The mutilator.
Yes. Please do not disturb Evelyn. She already is.
The night Evelyn came out of the grave?
No. Close your eyes for a second and sleep forever.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
No.
Pass.
How embarrassing.
I'm sorry, your time ran out.
That's because Justin interrupted. I don't have time for another one.
Do we get to mop up Eric's embarrassed in his tears?
I got one right.
Yes, Eric did get one right. So let me put the one down.
What were the missed?
Hide and Go Shriek was one of them. Wasn't it?
Mountaintop Motel Massacre.
Yeah.
I'll give you all the ones that remaining, and you can guess, but you're not going to get a point for it.
Okay.
All right. So the number two was Please Do Not Disturb Evelyn. She already is.
Is Wash.
Mountain Motel Top Massacre.
All right.
Mountain Motel. All right. Number three was Close Your Eyes for a Second and Sleep Forever.
Hide and Go Shriek?
No.
Was it not?
You're obsessed with that film tonight.
I know, I am. What was that then?
Joseph, you don't know it?
Close your eyes for a second and sleep forever. I know it, but it's on the... I can't think of it off the top of my head.
It's The Slumber Party Massacre.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Number four was The Nightmare Begins with the Kids Next Door.
That's Bloody Birthday.
Oh, Bloody Birthday.
Bloody Birthday, yeah. Yep.
Number five is No More Pencils, No More Books, No More Students.
That has to be something like the Graduation Day or Slaughter High.
No.
It's not The Redeemer.
Yes, it's the Redeemer.
Oh.
Okay. You said. All right, so now we're at Justin. Door number one or door number two?
Door number one, please.
Okay, now, like I said, it will start right after I hit this, read the first
right
question.
Right after I interrupt you, like you
said. Okay, it's not human, and it's got an axe.
The prey.
Now I got to start over, Eric.
Mm. I didn't say anything! Okay. It was Justin who interrupted himself.
Pay to get in, pray to get out.
The funhouse.
These are so easy. Scream till dawn.
Scream to dawn, I don't pass.
Okay, where shopping can cost you an arm and a leg.
Chopping mall.
Yes, it's cheaper than a chainsaw.
Pieces. No, no.
Thumbs up.
Okay.
All right. So Justin got three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a feeling there was some rigging going on behind my back here because all my questions were difficult and Justin's ones were so easy.
I thought yours was easy.
Yeah. No, they weren't.
Eric, you just don't know. You don't know your trivia.
I do know my trivia.
I think we need a how can you just sit there and laugh at me line.
I know, wish I'd got one up. But
Eric, and
well, unfortunately you're not that professional, are you?
Eric. Or should I say Inga?
Eric and Joseph. Do you know you'll scream till dawn?
Just before dawn.
No.
Nice something with
nights in the title. Nights in the title.
Night warning. Nice.
No.
Mayor.
Do you know Joseph?
You'll scream till dawn.
Night Rider.
I don't remember.
The Night Rider. It's To All a Good Night. And number five was It's Cheaper Than a Chainsaw.
That's Nail Gun Massacre.
Seller.
Yeah, it is Nail Gun. All right, Justin, you got three.
Excellent. Thank
you. Five. You're welcome. And that was even with Inga interrupting.
I know. Well, that's the professional that I am.
Okay, Joseph. You automatically get door number two. And like I said, it will start right after I read the first question. All right. Marty majored in cutting classmates.
Slaughter High.
Competition was murder at?
Cheerleader camp.
Their hazing was a night to dismember.
Hell Night.
No.
We'll go.
Where the school colors were blood red.
Splatter University.
Yes, and the second prize is death.
Fatal Games.
You shot that one. All right, well, time was officially up before Fatal Games, but you've won anyway, so I guess it doesn't really matter.
Yay.
Okay, does anybody know their hazing was a night to dismember?
The initiation.
No.
The hazing was a night to dismember. Not prom night four? No.
No. It was Blood Sisters.
Blood Sisters, okay, yeah.
And you know, I have to say, the final score, Joseph has 10. Justin has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.5, and Eric has 2.5.
Shut it!
Remember,
just have you all know that I look so good that if looked at, if looked at, if been good was a crime, I'd be on death row.
Remember, Eric, it's the taking part that counts.
Whatever.
Right.
I'm the professional in the quizzes. I never, you know, have a meltdown. So when we actually stop recording the episode, I'm going to rub this in Eric's face on Facebook.
I was about to say, of course you never meltdown. You won.
Yeah.
This one.
Well, even when I lose, I'm always civil about it.
Yeah, well, so am I.
I have a suspicion that all the answers were given to you at Grand Grants the other night.
Well, he wouldn't know them.
Here, Nathan, give me the answers and I'll give you some of my ice cream.
I didn't have ice cream that night. I had a cookie.
Ever!
Right. Well, thank you, Nathan, for another very entertaining quiz, even if you did make us sing. Unfortunately, the Skype issues continue, so I do apologize for the reflex remix that is going on, but hopefully you can bear with us. It might we'll clear it. Okay, well, by the power or the magic of the internet, we are back, and hopefully on a slightly better line, although we're not quite sure how that works. But anyway, that was a fun quiz. wasn't it Eric?
Okay.
So Inga gets another airing, another spanking even. But let's now move on.
Yeah, well, I like that.
Sorry?
Well, I like that.
You like that. Okay, well, fair enough. Let's move on to our feature presentation for this time. And it's also from Nathan, and Nathan is going to bring us in after the trailer for Crinoline Head.
You guys are just jealous because you're not Delta, Pi, Sigma, Kappa, Alpha.
I got your Delta power right here, Hoochie.
And I hope you have some cocktail sauce to go with those crabs.
We're here to have fun on this Lake of Paradise.
Lake of Terror is more like it.
And what's that supposed to mean?
Oh, you'll find out sooner or later.
It's a doll. What's it doing here?
Crazed, cannibal boy bound to death on Earth.
Well, do you believe it? Do you think you might come back here?
What's wrong? Scared of Crinoline Head?
Let's just keep this place to ourselves, okay? There's no sense ruining the rest of the weekend.
Vinny, is that you? Who's out here? Hello? I'm in here taking a dump.
Frightening.
Is it?
Sorry. Justin, how dare you interrupt me?
Sorry, I apologize. Okay.
Crinoline Head concerns a group of best friends who decide to head out to a lake house for the weekend. Now, this group are obviously, they all like each other tremendously. And they're out for fun in the sun when a psycho... dressed with a crinoline skirt over his head, starts killing them off in kind of bizarre ways. I mean, you don't often see somebody killed with a stalk of celery, you know. So it got originality points for that. I first heard of Crinoline Head when I saw a full page ad in Fangoria back in the 90s, and I ordered it and watched it, and I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. I mean, it's just so over the top and ridiculous. I couldn't help but enjoy it. And the characters mostly, like, I love the character of Trish, who is just completely mean and evil for no reason whatsoever. I mean, it's like somebody cooks her dinner and she just walks up and is like, "Where the hell's my food?" That's not how she says it. It's more like, "Where the hell is my food?" Or something like that. I love her. But anyway, yeah, I love all the characters, and, you know, I just thought it was a fun film. If I had any complaint, I think it would be that the killings take too long to get started. But when I did the interview with Tommy, you know, he said that, you know, the film came up too short, so they had him go back and, like, pad out the running time with all these extra scenes. And, you know, watching it, you could kind of tell that that's what was going on. But, you know, I mean, it's the... You know, pros and cons of low-budget filmmaking, you know, I mean. But like I said, I enjoyed it. You know, fun movie, in my opinion. And I will first turn it over to Joseph.
Okay, well, I first saw Crinoline Head in 1996, right around the time Scream came out. So I was kind of, you know, searching for more of those similar type films. And someone online on a
some message for him or something, said, well, you should watch Crinoline Head. It's, you know, it's funny in that manner, like Scream. So I was like, okay. And he sent me a copy on VHS, and I remember not particularly caring for it. I thought it was kind of grating, and I guess it was all the accents and the over the top Valley Girl stuff. But you know, watching it again recently, I can't say that I really enjoyed the film on a, you know, thrill level. But you know, it has a lot of great dialogue and, you know, just over the top, you know, kind of John Waters esque stuff. And I think Tommy Faircloth, the writer director, and he also played Bodie in the film. I think he's kind of captured a really, you know, kind of a low budget John Waters film, more so than just a slasher film. You know, I'm not gonna beat around the bush here. Some of the acting is a little spotty. I mean, I guess that's what to be expected when you kind of, I guess you're gathering your, you know, friends and family together to film a movie. But you know, some of it's actually pretty good. The guy who plays Derek is actually really good, I thought. And I do love the stalking with the celery and the toilet bowl stuff. And I like the character of Kathy, the butchy girl. I think she gets kind of a bad rap, but I kind of liked her. She, something about her was just kind of, you know, watchable. Overall, I'd give this a marginal recommendation if you like kind of over the top, you know, John Waters stuff, some really funny dialogue. I do like, you know, I like all the characters, so that's good. I mean, appropriately, there's a bitch. Appropriately, there's the nice guy, you know, and the nice girl. And I think they all kind of, you know, mesh well together. No one's just outright mean. And it's not a mean film. It's, you know, it's got a lot of heart to it. I think some of the kind of, you know, some of the Valley Girl stuff might get on other people's nerves if you're not really used to that. But it really didn't bother me as much as it did back in the past. But yeah, I'd say a slight recommendation. I'd say go for it.
Awesome. Justin?
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot, actually. A lot more than I thought I was going to. I didn't really, because I'd never seen it, but I kind of, it's a film, I don't know, I would always, it was a bit put off, I think, by the poster. It just looked really cheap. And so I don't know why, I just never saw it. I don't think it ever came out on video in the UK, as far as I'm aware. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was actually much funnier than I thought it was going to be. Definitely, obviously, the John Waters vibe is, you know, is kind of overwhelming. But I still thought it was really good fun. I loved the character of Jenny, the you know, kind of psychotic. Well, not just psychotic, but she just kind of hyper annoying, kind of like Valley Girl sort of sorority sister. And Trish, I think, was hilarious. Actually, I've got a little bit of dialogue here from Trish. Shall I play it?
Yes.
She was. When did she do this? Last night at the kegger? Shut your filthy trap. No, she didn't. Oh my god. I cannot wait to meet this skank bitch. Jesus, God. Sounds like she throws her snatch around like a pocketbook. Oh no.
She throws her snatch around like a pocketbook.
Pocketbook, yes.
You know, they throw that over their shoulder when they go out, you know, shopping and...
Oh, you know, right. Okay,
kitchen,
yeah.
Kitchen duties and stuff.
Yeah. She was so nasty, but hilarious. I just thought she was really funny. Yeah, so I liked all the characters. I mean, they're all kind of, you know, exaggerated. You know, you've got the butch lesbian. You know, you've got the really annoying preppy guy with about a million different jumpers or sweaters, which he's got knotted around his neck. So I loved the way that he was killed by being strangled to death with one of his sweaters. But yeah, no, I thought it was good fun all the way through. I thought it was, you know, obviously the limitations of the budget show through, but the dialogue, I thought if you can get into the swing of things, and I think Joseph's right that some people would find it immensely annoying, this film, but if you can get behind it, and you don't find it annoying, then you can have a lot of fun with it. And I think, as in an interview, actually, I think that's something that the interview you did with Tommy coming up in a bit, Nathan, that he recognises that, doesn't he? He says it's a real love or hate. You either love it or hate this movie. But I really liked it. So thank you for introducing me.
Yeah, awesome. And Eric.
Yeah, I had never seen this film either. Again, it never came out over on this side of the Atlantic, I don't think. So when I heard it was like a 1995 or 96 straight-to-video slasher movie, I was kind of dreading it, to be honest. But I was delighted to see, as it unfurled in front of me, that it was like the slasher movie equivalent of a Jan Terry video. yes. I mean, I was just smiling from start to finish as the silliness unfolded. You've got the sorority bitches, and for the first time ever in a slasher, I think you have a bitchy pledge as well. You just see nonsense from anyone. And I love the exaggerated Romy and Michelle-like characters, including that incredible dialogue. I think I quoted earlier one of my new favourite lines ever in a movie, and it's something I think that Lana should have said in A New Beginning, Friday the 13th, New Beginning. Girl, if looking good was a crime, you'd be on death row. I love the overuse of whatever, which I've been using a lot on this episode, I realise. There's some great fashion tips in there. I mean, I love the way one of the lead actors plays wears a Plan 9 from Outer Space t-shirt, as if he's sort of winking at the audience. The director saying, you know, I do realize I'm making a kind of a cheesy, low-budget movie here. And also the character the director plays, is it Bodie, is his name? Goes around in a t-shirt. When Tiffany would have been, you know, well past her sell-by date by 1996. And also, I think he mentioned, I didn't notice this in the film, but he mentions in the interview coming up that there's a New Kids in the Block sleeping bag in there as well. I mean, these are certainly by the time the film was made, New Kids in the Block were old hat as well. And this is one of the very few films, in fact, it's probably the only film where celery is a plot point. And I do agree. I mean, you don't have to shove celery stalk down my throat. You just have to put a tiny bit of celery on my lips and I would die, because I think it's the most vile thing ever. Did anyone notice any similarities in the film between certain characters and a certain someone on the podcast? There's a guy who's a red herring in the film who's very... he's very skinny and likes to wander around graveyards in the middle of the day. Did that remind you of anyone?
Oh.
And also, they encounter a very aggressive drunken drag queen in the middle of nowhere. Does that remind you of anyone on the podcast? No?
No, Eric.
Oh, what about...
I do know that when the killer is unmasked and he goes off on that, why me tirade, that reminds me of someone.
Shut up.
Yes. Somebody should be taking a chill lozenge.
And you know, chill lozenge. I love chill lozenge. Also, do you know the character of Jenny when she's suffering her hangover in the morning and she keeps falling over and injuring herself? That kind of reminded me of a certain someone on the podcast.
I did it, Eric. Well, why don't we play a little bit of Cootie, shall we, Inga?
Hey, do you need some help?
Why, sure, sugar. Hi, I'm Cootie Tisha Canfleco. My friends call me Cootie.
Derek, let's get the hell out of here.
Hey, bitch. I don't think he's talking to you.
What's the matter? Are you stranded?
No, I'm just looking for some action.
Ew, what the hell is that?
I don't know, but lock the doors.
So, Justin, did you have to go to the States to film that, or did they do it in the UK?
They're actually looking at a picture of you, Eric, when that last...
Ooh! Handbags!
It's good.
The only scene in Crinoline Head that has any resemblance to me is that they all have cake for breakfast, okay?
Yes, okay.
Yeah. Nathan, I'm getting on board with all of these choices you're coming up with now. I really enjoyed Crinoline Head from start to finish. It runs about 75 minutes, so it's a nice duration. It's, again, not for everyone, as you were saying. I think the low budget and then sort of the scenery-chewing acting might grate on people. But I enjoyed it, and I'm beginning to worry that when we get around to this infamous Blood Lake and Terror at Ten Killer double bill, I may end up enjoying Terror at Terror Killer.
That would be awesome.
That scares me more than any crinoline skirted killer, I have to say. thumbs up from me. Loved it.
I have to say, awesome. I'm thrilled with your guys' responses, because I've always been a fan of it. So I'm glad you finally got to see it and enjoy it. And just a couple more points. Number one, when Joseph mentioned that he thought that the guy that played the killer, Derek, you know, the actor was good. I actually, when I was rewatching it again yesterday, was paying attention to him throughout the film, and he actually does give a really good performance, because in some scenes when they're talking about, they're given the history of, you know, this young kid and his mother at the house, when it cuts to him and a few other people, like, he just has this look on his face like he's about to kill them right there. And I'm like, you know, that was actually good choice on his part, to, like, because it kind of already gives away who it is a little bit, you know, if you go back and rewatch it. I mean,
well, it's, you know, pretty obvious he's the attention. I think it's pretty obvious that he's the killer.
Yeah, because he disappears for a long period of time.
You know, I thought it was a shame that the guy playing Derek, I think his name's Richard Abbott, that's his only credit. And I thought, you know, pound for pound, I'd say he was probably the best actor in the film. I thought he was really good, actually. It's a shame he didn't really try to, you know, go on to do anything else.
Well, they obviously set up Paul, didn't they, as the red herring. They kind of,
yeah, he's the red herring.
Yeah.
I love the heroine at the end, like her choice when running away from the killer to run on the end of a dock.
Yes.
You know, where there's nowhere to go. Yeah.
And then hiding behind a bucket or something. Yes, yes.
Did anyone notice that Kelly's pom-poms were the same color as the Irish flag? I felt like it was like a little piece of home while watching the movie. No, okay, it's just me then.
No, but I did like it when Jenny threw her falsies at Paul.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like little kind of flying saucers across the room. I thought that was quite funny.
I noticed that one of the things that stuck out to me was the 90s fashions. I mean, we were looking at Sleepaway Camp not that long ago when everything was so tight. And then this film, everything is so baggy. I mean, those girls at the start were bullying four of them. Jenny. Sort of surround her. Yes. Four of them sort of surround her and are teasing her about being a sorority. And one of them has the baggiest jeans I have ever seen in my life. It'd be like if Justin put on a pair of my jeans. That's what it would look like.
Wow.
It was ridiculous looking. Yeah. It's like MC Hammer pants.
Was it that bad?
They call those parachute pants, don't they?
Mm-hmm. They do. They have a little poke at the 80s in the middle of their drinking session. Yeah.
Mm. Really, oh, yeah, because they bring up various...
Yeah, the facts of life.
These references.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it, that, I mean, obviously, it was this, and also, what's the other film? Is that There's Something Out There? They were kind of credited as kind of pre-Scream. Is that right? Is there Something Out There?
Oh, There's Nothing Out There?
There's Nothing Out There, sorry, yeah. That kind of pre-Scream where they do this, because obviously Evil Laugh sort of trumped all of them, didn't it, to some degree, of... Because the kind of spoofs of slasher movies have been around since slasher movies. You know, they were spoofing them back in the early 80s, weren't they? So it wasn't anything new. But that kind of self-referential thing it certainly predated Scream. But I don't think this film actually came out, really, did it, until after Scream had sort of been out?
Well, that Fangoria that... Nathan was mentioning, I've got it here in my hands. It's issue 160, and there's a 4-page article on Crinoline Head done by Tony Faircloth himself. And it's post Scream, because it's gotten in under the troubles he had with the MPAA on Scream. So it's obviously after it was released. Yeah, it's March 1997. So.
Right.
I liked what, was it Justin or Eric? I don't remember which one it was, talking about Trish being the only bitchy sorority pledge they've ever seen.
Yeah, that was me. Yeah,
she's trying to get into a sorority, and she's being so mean to the girl that actually can recommend her to get in.
I know. So brilliant.
I mean, I know Jenny's annoying, but still.
What accent did Jenny have? Because it didn't sound American to me.
I think it is American. She was just overdoing it.
Right, okay.
And an overdone sorority sister valley girl.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nathan, you mentioned that when she goes looking for her food, she goes, "Where's the hell is my food?" As if she's like Valine from Knots Landing.
Yeah.
So she kind of loses her accent for a second there.
But yeah, well, that's great.
I like when she's like saying the hamburgers, you know, have like messed up her stomach. So it shows her running to the house. She's running through a field and then running up to the house holding herself.
Well, it's not a proper slasher movie unless there's some toilet antics in it.
And that's one thing I always thought was really funny, you know, and because remember, she's in the toilet, they're in the bathroom, and the killer's trying to get in, and she's like, you know, I'm in here taking a dump. And then. you know, the killer still tries to get in, and she stands up, you know, and sticks her head out the door, and then, you know, doesn't see anybody. And then all of a sudden the killer's in the bathroom.
But you know, the thing is, she stands up and doesn't do the proper hygiene routine either.
Oh,
yeah.
And then true. gets drowned in her own diarrhea.
Oh, yeah.
Which is
awful. Yeah.
How terrible.
That is terrible. What a fitting end to to Trish.
Oh, yeah.
Totally, yes. Yeah. Was it a good time to go to the interview with Tommy Fairclough?
I jolly well think it is.
Okay, well, let's do that. Nathan, do you want to introduce this?
Yes, I made contact with Tommy on Facebook, and he was glad to do an interview.
I didn't think joining this sorority would be like joining a friggin' gym class.
Well, what did you think?
I thought I could join and then make fun of all the people that weren't in the sorority.
Well, yeah, but you have to pay your dues first.
I'm not paying shit.
Hello? No, you don't. I am the sorority sister, and you are the pledge. You do what I say. Got it?
Look.
No, you look. I suggest you get an attitude adjustment before going to talk to me. Light that up in hell.
Whatever.
See, I'm not Kathy, and you can't get away with talking shit to me, because when you talk shit to me, you are talking shit to all the Deltas.
Hey, everybody. This is Nathan, and I am here talking with the writer, director, and an actor from Crinoline Head, Tommy Fairclough. First off, thank you, Tommy, for coming on the show today.
Sure, thanks for asking. Appreciate it.
My first question, I guess, is, you know, how did Crinoline Head come about?
The actual story?
Yeah, just, you know, how you came up with the story and just, you know, got it made and everything.
Well, I mean, when I shot Crinoline Head, I was attending film school in Columbia at University of South Carolina. And, you know, while I'm in school during, you know, the years I was there, I worked on a lot of films and commercials and things like that. And summer break was coming up, and I just gotten off of working on Die Hard 3. It was shot in Charleston, and it was a huge movie. And I was just, you know, at that point really ready to shoot something of my own. And so with summer break coming up, you know, my friends, you know, we didn't really have anything to do because we was going to be out during the summer. I was like, this would be a great time, you know, try to get back together to shoot a film. And, of course, we had no money, you know, to shoot, especially on film back in those days. So what I did was I signed up for a summer independent study course, which I had to get approved, you know, through the dean. And that would give me access to all the school's film equipment for free. So basically, I could shoot this film and get a grade, you know, a credit at the same time, and wouldn't have to pay anything and rent any equipment. So that was the plan. And each, you know, all my friends worked on it. You know, I had two really good friends that were specialists in audio, which they went on to do tons of stuff now. They still work in audio. And I had another friend that did lighting. I myself, you know, shot all my own stuff. And just kind of cast it from people that we had used at school and, like, you know, some shorts and things like that. That's basically how, you know, we decided to shoot it. The story itself, you know, I had the title forever. You know, back when I was in high school, shooting stuff with, you know, VHS cameras and things like that, I was always, you know, trying to do just some kind of stupid little horror film, you know, kind of like Pumpkinhead or, you know, whatever, just coming up with something. And my sister happened to have been a clogger. People from the South know what that is. It's kind of like redneck tap dancing. And she had this skirt that she wore with this crinoline up under that made it fluff out. And so we were around the house, and I'm like, put that on your head. You're going to be a killer. You'll be Crinoline Head. And then we just, you know, shot and dumped stuff around the house. But I kept the skirt, and I kept the title, and I just knew one day I would do something with it. So that's where it all came from. So, and I still have that skirt.
What made you choose the horror genre for your first film?
Well, I mean, I really didn't even consider doing anything else. I've just always, you know, been obsessed with horror movies. It just kind of went there, even, you know, like I said, back in high school when I was shooting just stuff with, you know, back when I was in high school when, you know, the VHS camcorders first came out, you know. And so that's just something I've always loved, horror movies. And everything I did or everything wrote, you know, always end up being like a slasher. You know, even when I was as young as like in middle school, I used to write stories and would pass them around my friends and things like that at school. Of course, I'd put, you know, characters in it that were made up of my friends, but they're always horror movies, you know. And it was kind of a joke, you know, to see who was going to get killed and how they were going to get killed. So it just kind of, it just came natural, you know. I've been watching horror movies for as young as I can remember. I mean, I think, yeah, I can remember my parents taking me, well, I'm sure I just went with them, but the original When a Stranger Calls, I had to be, God, 4 or 5 years old. I don't know. I can remember being in the theater seeing that. So those kind of movies, I guess they just had an effect on me. I don't know.
You understand, When a Stranger Calls has that really scary opening sequence.
Well, I just remember the, you know, the calls coming from upstairs. I mean, that's just something I can remember seeing in the theater and everyone just flipping out, you know. And Jaws, I remember seeing Jaws in the theater. But I was really young. I can't believe my parents took me there.
Mine did as well, so I know what you mean.
Yeah.
And since you like horror movies, what's some of your favorites?
Well, I mean, of course, you know, those that I saw, you know, I saw Jaws, I saw What a Stranger Calls when I was really young, but as I, you know, got older and, you know, the cable came around and, you know, you'd get HBO and they would repeat the same movies, you know, 3 or 4 times a day, is when I first saw Friday the 13th, which I got obsessed with, and Halloween, and I can just remember, and Black Christmas. I remember Black Christmas was one of the first ones I saw, and it just was so eerie and creepy. And those kind of movies just really stuck with me. I mean, I love the slasher movies and, you know, how they kind of become more comical, but just the creepiness of some of the earlier movies is just what really got me off, I guess. I just really, so of course, you know, the staples, the Friday the 13th, the Halloween, the Nightmare on Elm Street. All those were movies that I just was obsessed with, and I would have posters. You know, I'd collect Fangoria magazine and cut out all the pictures of Jason and Freddy and just have them all in my room, like a normal kid would do, I guess, rock bands. But I had, like, all these killers all over my room.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, same here. I did the exact same thing, so I hear you. and get back to Friendly Head.
You know, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Elaborated, but you know, my mom thought I was crazy because I remember how gory these magazines were, like Gorzon and the Fangoria, and I would just, you know, just love looking at all the bloody photos, and she thought I was insane, I'm sure, but I was just doing research, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And going back to Crinolin Head, how difficult was it, you know, to get everything together, you know, like the location and the cast and everything? Mm-hmm.
I mean, right, it's really difficult. I mean, anyone that tries to get together a shoot, regardless if it's a feature or not, I mean, you know, it's really hard trying to get everyone's schedule, you know, to coordinate. You know, we need to shoot these days. Everyone needs to be here. And Crinolin Head and the cast had, like, you know, 8 or 9 main characters, and they were almost all in the same scene. I mean, now when I think about it, I'm just shocked, you know, that it worked. But, you know, like I said, all the crew members were my friends. You know, all we did was work on each other's short films and just, you know, didn't have anything during the summer, so that wasn't an issue. You know, we weren't working normal jobs or anything like that. And a lot of the actors and, you know, contacts that I met to set this up, you know, I met working on other films. So that kind of helped, you know, give a little legitimacy to, you know, the project I was doing. You know, oh, yeah, I remember you. We worked on, you know, Dire 3 or whatever, you know. So, but I mean, it was done really fast. You know, it was like, I think it was 8 or 9 days of shooting, and it was basically all, and the majority of it was at a lake house. So once I found a lake house that I could rent, you know, that was where all the main shots were. The stuff around the school and town and things like that, it was just, you know, guerrilla filmmaking. We'd just show up, film it, move on to the next scene. But, you know, back then, again, it was shot on film, so the cameras were, you know, massive, these huge Jerry Flex cameras, and they were just, you know, after 10 minutes of shooting, you'd have to change the magazine, reload film, and I mean, it was a whole process, nothing like it is now. I mean, it's a breeze now compared to what it used to be. So the fact that I even got the film done at all was, you know, once it was over with, I was like, I don't care if this sucks or not, I can't believe we actually finished the feature, you know.
Yeah, I think it's great that you were able to, you know, finish it, because I know, speaking to, you know, filmmakers from back in the early 90s and the 80s, they've all talked about, you know, how much easier it is now, you know, because, you know, shooting with digital is just so much easier than having to deal with film.
Exactly. I mean, you'd be crazy to shoot film now if you didn't have to. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, when just regular snap picture cameras turned digital, people were still, you know, were kind of reluctant to switch over from using, you know, film that you would develop. I mean, the quality is so much better. It's so much easier, and you save, you know, so much time. There's so much more you can do. And I mean, you'd be crazy not to. So that was kind of a reason why I only did two films and had such a long break in between. It was just so exhausting and costly to shoot a movie on film, you know, when you were by yourself, had no money, no backing or anything like that.
Yeah. Right from the get-go, was Crinoline Head always intended to be a campy throwback to 80s slashers?
Oh, yeah. It was really, you know, it was a weird time. I know a lot of people have never heard of it, and, you know, when they did hear of it, it was years later. But when we, you know, when I shot Crinoline Head, I was, you know, it wasn't that far out of the 90s. It was like mid-90s. And so, but I was still obsessed, you know, with the 80s movies. So there's all these references in Crinoline Head, you know, like the scene, you know, I personally carried around a cassette player, like headphones, and I had on a Tiffany shirt. There were all these 80s references, but it wasn't made out to be, you know, this takes place in the 80s. There were just little, you know, little subtle things like that. But at the time we were shooting Crinoline Head, the movie Clueless, I believe, was being shot at the same time. And so when it came out, you know, the big thing, Clueless, everybody was all whatever, you know, whatever, whatever. And we did that all throughout Crinoline Head. And I'm like, oh, God, people are going to think I ripped off Clueless when I was shooting this, which I didn't. And then also, I think Scream came out maybe the next year, where they kind of, that was kind of the resurgence of this whole horror, this throwback to the 80s movies. So it was all done during that time. And I thought it was really, you know, really weird, because I had no idea. I thought I was the only one that even cared about the 80s horrors anymore, because no one was really doing that. But it was almost, it was a really weird time. It was. I was obsessed with John Waters as well. So it was a kind of mix of all my stuff. It was a mix of, you know, my love of John Waters movies, you know, my sick sense of humor, and then, you know, of course, my love of slasher films. And I wanted to just create, you know, a character like Jason or like Freddy, some, you know, something you could dress up like for Halloween. And that was the whole point of, you know, him having this huge crimson skirt on his head. Anybody could dress up like him. So.
And it's funny you mentioned John Waters, because I was talking about this with some friends of mine recently, that in your movie, the characters of Trish and Jenny seem to have just stepped out of a John Waters movie.
Yeah, I mean, the one girl that played Trish, she was, I mean, I've known her for years. She was a really good friend of mine. She wasn't an actress or anything, but just the way we acted around each other, I was like, you know. She actually, her name was Kathy Flamingo. She was the one with the real long hair, played Trish, the one that died in a toilet bowl.
Yeah.
I've known her for years, and she actually, we used to do, you know, stupid, you know, videos with a VHS camera. We had, you know, shot some stupid horror stuff that she was always in. So when I already got to the point to do this, I was like, Kathy, you've got to play this role. You just play yourself. You'll be fine. You know, this is the first time she ever did anything. But the other girl that played Jenny, she was an actress. She'd done a lot of stuff. And I haven't talked to her in years. I don't even know where she is now. And she comes across, you know, psycho in the movie. But she seriously was that way in person. Like, she showed up at my house. I didn't even know how she got my address back when I was, you know, putting up casting notices about the film. And, I mean, she literally showed up at my front door and was like, I'm here for this role, and, you know, you need to see me. Because her headshot, she looked a lot older than someone that would be in college. And so she showed up, you know, at my door with the whole sorority look going. And if she hadn't done that, I probably wouldn't even have called her in. But she was insane in the movie and in real life.
So she was kind of like her character.
Yes. Oh, man. I mean, there's so much. She had so much drama going on, you know, outside this film. I mean, her and her husband were going through some issues, like, while they were shooting. I think, like, the day we wrapped, they were, like, getting a divorce or something, and he took her kids. It was, like, a mess. I just remember, you know, I was already stressed out shooting this film, and I was just like, thank God this happened after we wrapped, you know, because this film was, like, I mean, that sounds horrible. But, oh, my God, she was insane.
God, what a mess. Yeah, see, one of the character of Trish is one of the best, I would say, like, slasher movie bitch characters, because she's one of my favorite characters for bitchiness, because, like, in most slasher movies, like, you kind of get an idea that why the girl's a bitch, but Trish is just a bitch because she can be one. Like, there's one scene it's such a small scene, but it makes me laugh. It's when she's coming to get food from, they're having the cookout, and she just walks up to Derek and is like, where the hell is my food?
Yeah, she just has that self-righteous attitude, you know, like everyone should bow down to her. And it's so funny because, again, that's my friend, and we're just stupid. That's how we would act. And, like, and a lot of the reviews when this movie came out that were bad on it, I mean, of course they were horrible reviews, were good, or really, because either people really loved it or they completely hated it. But the way that we speak, it's almost like this own language we created. A lot of people were like, they didn't know if it was a Southern slang or if it was a valley talk or what, because some of the things that we would say off-screen, she would, like, end up saying some of her lines that way, and it would just crack me up, so I would just leave them in there. Plus, you know, we didn't have a lot of time to reshoot scenes over and over, you know. But, like, she would add extra syllables on words, and it was just this whole separate language. So people were like, what did she just say? Like, when she would say, when she called that one girl Butch, she would say, you know, not everyone can be as rich. You are people like, what did she just say? And I was like, I get it.
That was actually going to be one of my next questions, is whether all the dialogue was scripted or if the actors also ad-libbed some as well.
I mean, shockingly enough, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm really free with my actors. I let them say what they want, especially now, but that was pretty much word for word. I actually hadn't read the script in a long time, and I was making some copies to give to some people recently, and I was just kind of reading over it, and I was like, wow, this was really line for line. But, you know, I wrote it, you know, especially her dialogue, because I know how she talked, you know, and it was literally, I mean, I'm sure that I can't remember any right now. I'm sure there's extras, you know, words and lines, things like that people put in, but yeah, it was pretty much word for word. They were really good with that. And again, that was my first film, so I really wasn't, you know, I was like, you know, I wrote the script, just do what the script says. And as I've done more, you know, and I've realized I really don't like to rehearse. And if, you know, I want it to come out natural to make the actors look a lot better, if they come up with something I like even better, or, you know, that sounds natural, you know, I'm not opposed to it. So.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Are there any scenes that were cut out of the film?
Like, no, there was. Actually, there were a lot of scenes that we had to shoot almost 6 or 7 months later because, you know, when it was originally shot, it came in just over an hour, and the distributor that I was signing with wanted it to be longer, and so I needed to shoot about 15 more minutes of footage. So a lot of the scenes, which seem like they go on forever, are there for no reason. It's basically because I couldn't figure out where else I needed, you know. I was just done with it at the time. I was sick of it. I was ready to start on another project, but I'm like, I need to add 15 minutes of footage. So, and you'll notice, you know, when we shot this during the summer, everything's bright and green, and there's a couple of scenes where we're in the woods and everything is dead. All the trees are dead. It's because we had to reshoot in the winter these extra scenes. So there's like the whole beginning scene where Trish is in her apartment getting dressed, you know, putting on a little, all that was added, you know, after the fact. The whole part where she's running through the woods before she has that big scene where she has to crap everywhere, all that was added. There was a scene where me and Brian are in the graveyard near the beginning of the movie. That was all added after. If you look at it now, you can kind of see because everything is dead and brown. And, of course, you get to the lake, everything's bright and green. So.
I forgot to mention also another character that stepped right out of a John Waters movie would be Kutatisha Kinsueko.
Yeah.
I always love when,
I mean, of course, you know,
she,
you had to throw in your token drag queen or whatever. But yeah, I mean, he was, you know, all horror movies always have that crazy character that comes out of nowhere saying, you know, you're all going to die for no reason. And then you never see him again. So I had to add that in. And that guy, actually, I'd met on some other films like that we had worked on. I was as a production assistant, and you know, he was like, if you ever do anything, and I mean, you could tell in the movie, he was like a professional bodybuilder at the time. He was like super cut. But, you know, I tried to cover it up as much as I could. But, yeah, that name, Kudatisha Konsleka, that's something that's a name I've had a long time, and I couldn't wait to put it in a movie.
Yeah, and then, of course, the classic, you know, but her friends call her Cootie.
Yeah. Yeah. My friends call me Cootie, yeah. And she had jelly shoes that she threw at the car. We went looking for jelly shoes everywhere. That was another 80s reference right there. A lot of people didn't see.
And, you know, I didn't either until you just mentioned it. But, I mean, I can picture it in my head right now because I just watched it. So I'm like, well, yeah, they were jelly shoes.
Yeah, I mean, like the scene where he ducks down at the car and he's talking to him. I told him, I'm like, flop the shoes inside the car so we can see that they're jelly shoes. So if you watch it again, you see when he's talking, he kind of puts them in the window nonchalantly. And when he tells Kathy to floss with his tampon string.
Are there any more behind-the-scenes stories that you could share?
I don't know. Did you see? I mean, because when this came out on VHS, there were some, you know, copies that had just the film, and there were some that had the behind-the-scenes footage. So I don't know if you even saw the behind-the-scenes footage that we included. I mean, there was a lot of fun stuff on that. That's on the new DVD version. But besides the, you know, just the insane schedule, there were some, I do remember, I think I told about this in Fangoria Magazine. There was like a local news channel somehow knew we were shooting a movie out on the lake, and they were wanting to come out and film and interview people. And the day they wanted to come out, you know, we were done. There was nothing to shoot. I think we had shot, like, some just wild sound, and there was nothing there. And so we were like, you know, we're going to have to make up some scene and pretend like we're filming when these guys get here. So there was a scene where we go out on the dock with the camera, and we pretend like we're rolling, and we'll sound, and we're filming the scene where Billy, the real butch girl in the movie, takes an axe and swings it at Trish, and she falls off the dock into the lake. So we filmed this whole elaborate scene. It wasn't even in the movie. We weren't even shooting film. I mean, we just did it for the news channel. I never even saw that. But I've got behind-the-scenes footage of that.
Oh, I'd love to see that. Is that on the DVD?
I think there's a shot of it on there. I know I've got it on the I mean, I've got tons of footage. I don't know if that made that particular scene, but we've got the car, the local channel, WIS, they were all out, and I was just like, oh, God, this is so stupid. You know, why couldn't they come when we're actually shooting something? Because a lot of it took place at night, and this was during the daytime. I think that's why we didn't have anything. And I said, it's going to look so dumb when people are watching this going, why would we, you know, this looks like the stupidest movie. She's just taking an axe to this girl on a dock. But the girl Jenny, that played Trish, I mean, she'd done a lot of stuff. She'd done stuff on Matlock and all these, you know, shows that were filmed in the South. And so this was something completely out of her realm. And, you know, when they were interviewing her, I mean, she was just, you know, talking like she's freaking, you know, some superstar. And I was just, gosh, you know, she was just playing it up so big. And I'm telling you, she was crazy in real life, though.
I guess it's a good thing her character got killed off so early then.
Well, I mean, you know what? I wasn't even supposed to be in this film. I mean, I'm not an actor. And I did not want to, you know, that was just another job I would have besides, you know, doing everything else. But the guy that was playing my role, like, literally backed out the day before. And, you know, he was a friend of mine, too, that went to school with us. And he was so all about playing this character. He was supposed to be more like a, you know, like Jamie Kennedy played that B-Rad character in Malibu's Most Wanted, you know, a B-boy. He was supposed to be like that. And he was all about it. And, like, literally the day before he started shooting, he backed out. And it was just, I was so pissed. So, of course, I mean, I had to play the role. And people didn't know what to think about that either because I kind of talked like Kathy. But then I was a dude, so it was like I was a guy, valley girl. They didn't know what the hell I was. So.
And at the end of Curling Head. Oh, go ahead.
I don't know. I was just so stressed out, you know, shooting this whole film. The last thing I cared about was my performance. I was just ready to get killed off, you know.
Right. I loved your Tiffany shirt.
Well, yeah, that was actually my Tiffany shirt. Like, I literally was obsessed with Tiffany. So, and I had that shirt. I've kept it. I think I still have that shirt. I actually got to meet her a few years ago. So she was somebody I was obsessed with. So I was like, I'm going to put this, you know, that'll be another 80s reference too. And I had a New Kids on the Block sleeping bag. I don't know if you noticed that. That was a sleeping bag the girl got killed in, you know, the car ran over. That was a New Kids on the Block sleeping bag.
Yeah, I think I read that in an interview once, and I always thought it was funny that the character of Kathy, you know, who's like, kind of like the butch lesbian
the
type,
butch lesbian.
That had the New Kids on the Block.
I know. I was like, you know, that was another thing. I was like, you know, I just like the first stuff in there to see if anybody even noticed. No one ever even said anything, you know. She was really like a butch Annette Funicello. You know, if she looked just like Annette Funicello, if Annette Funicello was this really butch lesbian.
And at the end of Crinoline Head, obviously we learn that he's still out there because he drives away in his car and it says Crinoline 2. And I understand that you're planning a sequel, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally been 18 years, you know, since that film was shot. And it's crazy because, I mean, it took a few years for it to come out, and then it took a few more years for, you know, people to actually see it and, you know, respond to it. I mean, so it was just something that it took a while to catch on. And then by the time it did, I had already started on another film, you know, which, you know, I had a little more money and a little more time. And it was like a step up, but it's crazy. I would still, you know, get emails and messages from people that just, you know, are just discovering it or that liked it. And so earlier this year, I got both my film rights back and I was releasing them on DVD. I was like, you know, I really, you know, want it. Jokingly, people were like, you need to shoot a sequel to Crinoline Head. And I'm like, dude, it's been like 18 years, you know. I'm like, that would be, and the more I thought about it and I started getting, you know, ideas, you know, I was like, you know, this is something I really want to do. But I was like, I haven't shot a film, you know, 15 years. And I'm like, I don't want to just come out of nowhere and try to, you know, shoot Crinoline Head 2. So I kind of need to go about it, you know, slowly. So this is where the idea of shooting my short film, The Cabin, came around. I was like, you know, this will kind of be my way of tiptoeing back into the water, into the genre of horror. You know, test out some new equipment. You know, the technology's changed. Let me see what I can do, how it'll look. And that was really the whole purpose of me shooting this new short film. But after it was done, you know, it was really good. I mean, and started, you know, getting picked up at a lot of film festivals. And everybody was, you know, this is a great story. I mean, this story itself could, you know, kind of develop into a feature. And so I was like, you know, this will be good. You know, this will give me, you know, more time for Crinoline Head 2. And so that was my plan then, just kind of to get some attention, you know, playing at these festivals, maybe get some, you know, new people discovering Crinoline Head. And early next year, I want to, you know, launch a campaign for the sequel, which I want to shoot sometime around May of next year. You know, crowdfunding and things like that weren't around back in the day when I was starting out. Otherwise, you know, I'd have been one of those people jumping on it in a minute, you know, because, you know, you can come up with some really good perks to, you know, to help out, you know, besides, you know, just pre-ordering a DVD. But, you know, we've come up with some really good, you know, perks for our fundraiser on things like, you know, working on the film itself, being in the film or even getting killed, things like that, that I would have jumped on in a minute being a horror fan back in the day. So I'm hoping, you know, the attention that I'm getting from The Cabin will kind of snowball and help, you know, get a lot of new people to help out with the campaign for Crinoline Head 2.
Yeah, that should be awesome. And people can join that Facebook group for Crinoline Head and the sequel. So I think people that are listening to this should.
Yeah, I created a Facebook for Crinoline Head 2, but I really hadn't promoted. I just kind of did it, and, you know, really slow, just kind of let people find it, you know. I've got my production company on Facebook, which is Horse Creek Productions, and there, you know, there's information on all my films, Crinoline Head, A Generation X, The Cabin, you know, any film festival we play at. So you can find that on Facebook or our website, you know, horsecreekproductions.net. But, kind of just slowly been, you know, putting a little bit out here and there, Crinoline Head 2. We shot like a little teaser for it not too long ago and put it up on Vimeo, so there's a link to that as well. But I'm really excited to do it. It's going to be, you know, The Cabin was more of a, I mean, I love The Cabin. It was more of a suspenseful type movie. It was a lot more mature than some of the stuff I've done, but I'm a real, you know, big fan, like I said, of John Waters and just that absurd, you know, slasher genre, and I want to bring a little bit of both of that back, you know, into Kremlin Head too. I love coming up with, you know, insane creative ways to kill somebody off in a film, and at the same time have a lot of those creepy scares, you know, that make you jump out of your seat at the same time. So I'm really excited about that. I can't wait to get started on it.
I can't wait to see it. I mean, like I said, I'm a huge fan of the original, so, you know, I know I'll probably end up loving the sequel just as much.
I'm glad. It's funny to hear that. Like I said earlier, you know, the people that really like Kremlin Head, I mean, they absolutely loved it. And then there was those that just completely hated it. There was no one in the middle. I think the people that absolutely hated it were ones that, you know, sometimes when you go to video stores, you would pick up a box just based on the artwork, and then you'd be hating the movie. I don't know. I think people that really hated my movie just hated horror movies in general, which I don't understand. Then maybe they thought it was just going to be a comedy. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's fun to run across people that, you know, have seen it and, you know, have the original VHS, you know, still to this day.
That's how I saw it. It was an ad in Fangoria. I remember seeing the ad in Fangoria with a baby doll head with the knife stuck through it. And I ordered it directly from your production company.
Yeah, and when that ad came out, I mean, that was literally like 2 years after the movie had been done. Because like I said, after we shot Kremlin Head, I immediately signed with this distributor out of Texas, which he just turned out to be such, you know, a pain in my ass. He had no idea what he was doing. I think he was new, just starting out. When he sent me the artwork that his quote-unquote company created, I was just like, fell out. It was just like, it looked like something you would make on like a Radio Shack computer printed on like dot matrix. It was just the worst shit ever. And, you know, that's why after, you know, especially when I had to go back and shoot more footage to please him, and then he didn't do anything with it. Once I finished my second film, Generation X, I was finally able to get Kremlin Head back to re-release on VHS, and that was when you saw those ads in Fangoria magazine. So we were able to, you know, get some really cool artwork made, get it, you know, re-released on VHS, and at the same time I was shooting my second film. And then later I think we did an ad that actually had both films in it. But now you can pretty much get it. You can get it on Amazon. You can, you know, get it on our website. Because like I said, it was never released on DVD until this year. So you can actually download it or like stream it on Amazon, like video on demand. You can get the DVD. There's still a few VHS left, because back in the day you had to get like thousands made, you know, to get those boxes printed. So I do have a few of the original VHSs left, and a lot of collectors like to get those. You know, I saw on eBay before, you know, earlier this year, where, you know, copies were selling for like 80, 90 bucks, and that flipped me out. I had no idea, and I was like, why was I selling these?
Yeah, you never know how much, you know, it's going to be worth. And
yeah, I mean, especially, you know, VHS, it's like this huge resurgence, like all these VHS collectors, and it was like, you know, I had all these VHS movies that I threw away, and a friend of mine, Paul Talbot, he's also done a lot of movies. He's done like Hellblock 13, Freak Show. Anyway, he's big on this VHS too. He collected me. He's like, asked me if I had any movies. I was like, dude, I just threw away like 5 boxes of VHS movies. And he's like, what? I was like, it's okay though. I got them on DVD. He was like, no, those are worth so much money now. And he kind of, you know, showed me some groups and things like that. And that's how I discovered, you know, people were collecting Kremlin Head and Generation X and how much they were selling for on eBay. And that was kind of like the spark to kind of go, maybe I need to re-release these films on DVD, see if people are still interested in them.
Yeah, I'm glad you did, because, you know, I've always hoped that it would come out on DVD eventually, so I'm glad it finally did. And it's been great chatting with you about Kremlin Head, and I wanted to, before we wrap up the interview, to get that website address out there again to anybody listening where they can order it.
Yeah, my website, my production company is called Horse Creek Productions, so you can just go to horsecreekproductions.net. You can look us up on Facebook, same name, or you can go to Amazon. They sell it there. If you go to our website, we don't charge for shipping and things the way Amazon does. I always say go to our website, but, you know, whatever. Some people have Amazon points they like to use. Like I said, you can. We have the VHS. We have the DVD. DVD's got a lot of extra stuff, the behind-the-scenes footage, the trailers, you know, music video. There's a really cool music video from Kremlin Head, this punk group, where at the end, the guy threw up everywhere, and my distributor made me edit out, but I have that in there as well. So.
Oh, awesome.
I'm just like,
awesome.
You know, you worry about the video of this guy throwing up, and in the movie a girl gets drowned in a toilet full of her own crap. I'm like, I doubt this throw-up thing is going to offend anybody.
Right. Well, I tell you what, I've had a great time chatting with you about this movie, and it's been fun learning a lot more about it. So I appreciate
you coming on
and willing to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I had a podcast with someone other week about it, so I'm like, you know, talking about it actually makes me remember things that I forgot. So I'm just glad people still appreciate it.
And I'll be sure once the official podcast goes out that I send you the link so that way you can check it out.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Great.
All right. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks a lot.
But seriously, Paul, what about this lake of terror? You act like you know something that we don't know.
Well, last week when Derek told me about this trip, I decided to do a little research on the place, you know, just to find out its history. Well, it turns out this place has a pretty sick story behind it.
What? Come on, tell us, man. You're not going to listen to some stupid story that this weirdo probably made up, are you?
And that was Tommy Faircloth, and I really appreciate him doing that interview, because it was a really good interview, I have to say. So thank you very much, Tommy.
Excellent. Yes, thank you, Tommy. That was very enlightening. So, Nathan, is there anything else? Is there any background or anything that wasn't covered?
I think I covered most of it in that interview. I'm very excited for the sequel, I have to say.
Yes.
Well, I have a question about that interview, actually. He mentions that he was, he was part of the crew of Die Hard 3, but the Internet Movie Database has him listed as Die Hard 2. I wonder which one is correct.
Yeah, I noticed that as well.
I mean, he's saying it's Die Hard 3, so, you know, he was probably there, so I'd say it's Die Hard 3. It's just
it might just be an error on the IMDb.
Yeah.
I have a few things that I've got from this issue of Fangoria. Just a couple of things. He attempted to merge Heathers with Friday the 13th with a touch of Pink Flamingos, which I think he succeeded in doing. He originally wanted Colleen Fitzpatrick, who was in Hairspray, the original John Waters version, to play the sorority Jenny. But she was too busy with her band Eve's Plum, which sounds a bit rude. But IMDb still has her listed in the cast, although she's not assigned any character names, so I think that's another IMDb flub. Tracy Powless, who ended up playing Jenny, at the time the Crinoline Head was made, she was working as a stunt double for Tori Spelling in a made-for-TV movie called Deadly Pursuits. And the poo-poo on Trisha's face after she's drowned in her own diarrhea, that was made of Baby Ruth's chocolate bars, nuts, and bottled chocolate fudge that were all melted together in a microwave. And the stickiness
Baby Ruth!
What's his name again?
Sloth.
Sloth, yeah, I was going to say Lurch, but that's not right. And the stickiness of the fake poo made her eyes stick together. There we go.
There you go. Marvellous.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't have anything extra to add to that, Eric's kind of a chocolate poop story. Joseph, do you have anything?
I would like to say that, yeah, I don't really have anything, but I would like to say Tommy is a great guy. He's friends of mine on Facebook. He actually pledged towards our movie. He's a really great guy.
Oh, excellent. Well,
he reminds me, he looks like Paul Rudd, I think, in this movie a bit. No? Mm. Just me? Okay.
A little bit, yeah. Yes. Excellent, excellent. Nathan, is there anything else you want to say about Crinoline Head?
Just that I love the fact that the character of Kathy, out of all of them, is the one with the New Kids on the Block sleeping bag.
I know. You mentioned that in the interview, yeah.
I
love Kathy, but yeah. That's not the kind of sleeping bag I would picture her having. And no. Where is she camping out? Is she, like, lying in the driveway?
So it looks like
lying.
She should. Maybe her Indigo Girls sleeping bag was in the wash.
Yes.
Yeah. I think Crinoline Head, you know, for that death, he could claim it was an accident. You know, and Matt could get away with it if she was lying in the driveway. Just say I didn't see her. You know.
So
I am interested in seeing what he does with the supposed Crinoline Head 2 with all this new technology. I'm wondering what he's going to do with that.
Will there be a character with a celery addiction, though? That's what I want.
Mm.
I almost think that celery addiction was just to have that hilarious death scene.
Yes.
Just because it's like, okay, so, yeah. Here's some celery.
Like our resident vegan fin here probably doesn't even like celery as far as I remember.
I don't, well, Eric, am I right? I do eat it a bit, Eric, but I'm not a big
fan. If you ever want to impress your bear friends, eating lots of celery will give you arcing ropes of jism.
Pardon? Is that a line from the movie?
No, that's actually, you eat a lot of celery and it makes your prostate gland produce more semen.
Oh. All
right. Was that necessary?
Yes, for Eric it is.
Well, for the next bukkake party I'm going to, I'll stock up on celery.
Eric.
Get that yogurt cannon working.
That went too far.
Yes, I think we've gone too far. Although I've got a new little clip. Although we haven't had any double entendres so far, have we?
I don't think so. But I want to hear it anyway. Let's hear it.
Well, someone make a double entendre and then I can play it, because otherwise I can't play them.
It's on the tip of my tongue. I don't know. I can't think.
I've got a big one.
Okay. Eric has a big blue one.
Right.
Oh, Rector, sorry.
Don't apologize, Tom. You better pump the organ today.
So there. Special one for today.
Yes.
So let's all pump the organ. And shall we move on to feedback?
Yes. Yay.
Yes. Well, here's how to get in contact with the show. If you can stand listening to the show with all of the Skype remix going on. But here's how to get in touch with us.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at THC_podcast. Our 58233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Okay. Even that got a Skype remix.
Yes, it did. Yeah.
So don't have put loads of extra zeros into that telephone number. But yes, okay. Well, we haven't got any voicemails this time, but we have got, I think we've all got something to read out, haven't we? But shall I start? I've got, I've got a short one. I've got a longer, it'll get longer in a minute.
If I were you, might Sorry? Explode.
It'll get longer in a minute. I've got a big one coming up. But, this is from Kevin Moore and Becky Simpson. They say, "Hello guys. And Inga, just thought I'd leave a bit of feedback on the long-anticipated 69th. It was a great episode, as ever, which had me giggling like a schoolgirl through the sex scenes part. Halloween's 4 and 5 were inspired choices, and even if the films themselves are more than little. Oops. And that bared repeating. But the news I'm most excited about, as well as The Night Before Easter, is the forthcoming mystery Blu-ray commentary track. My partner and I have been lapping up Savage Water commentary, which is both hilarious and informative, and we're holding off on Death by Invitation so as not to peak too early. A big thanks to Joseph for sending out this gem, and it's a real shame Vinegar Syndrome had to pull what would have been the highlight of their catalogue. For all the fun times, may the hysteria continue." And that's from Kevin Moore and Becky Simpson. So.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Yes. Yeah. Well, hopefully we don't have a timeline for the announcement for the upcoming Blu-ray, but
no, we do not.
We do not. But as soon as we know, we will let you know as well. So, I'm glad you're enjoying it, and hopefully, some of you would have heard the Night Train to Terror.
Yeah, with Justin's commentary on it. I hear it's really good.
Yeah, is it Justin?
Apparently, it's. Yeah, I've been getting rave reviews. People.
Oh, and also, just so everybody knows, we're a group of bloggers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Justin, I hear you can hear some background voices on your commentary track. What happened there?
I don't know. There's some annoying people just going chatting about shoes and stuff in the background. Yeah, and breakdowns.
They were being really mean toward the film, according to one side.
Yeah.
Yes, we got some raves, but also some people who obviously hadn't heard the podcast before and didn't. Because the thing is, it's like, you know, if you listen to this podcast, you know that we rag on these movies a bit. We do it with love, don't we? It's not, yes. We're not mean about the movies, are we? We love
the subject. Bring in the love.
Exactly. So, and I think we weren't, I think we, you know, we had the right balance. And that's why Vinegar Syndrome said that they like us doing the commentaries, because we, you know, we bring humor to it, but we also appreciate the films for what they are. So it's not just about laughing at bad movies. Although
I hear an aeroplane.
Yeah, what is that?
My God,
Nathan.
I live near, you know, in a flight zone. Pardon me.
Was that an aeroplane going past?
He lives near the airport.
Oh.
I thought it was Eric reconnecting with the mothership.
Well, I'm glad I'm not from the same planet as you. I'm going back to my home planet of Noodle Boob.
Uranus.
I have to go now. My planet needs me.
Yeah.
He is the Poochie of the podcast.
That's so unfair.
Oh.
How rude.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, the sound, problems continue on the hysteria continues. But who'd like to go next?
I'll go.
Me.
Oh, you're going to have to fight it out.
Go ahead, Eric.
You hear me? Yeah.
No, we can
I have
hear
one
you.
Here from. Yeah, I have one from Mike Tomlinson here. He says, "Hi all, I have a very quick message, but it's more asking for some advice. I have seen plenty of 80s slashers, but I'm an absolute virgin in the vast field of giallo. If you can put yourselves in the role of a teacher, where would you suggest I start with giallo? Should I focus on a certain director or begin with, or just plunge in randomly with the films you have often mentioned? There seems to be a lot, so I wouldn't mind a bit of structure as to how to go about starting. Thank you for all the suggestions. Thank you all for any suggestions." That's from Mike Tomlinson. Mm. But Mike, my favorite.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say my starting point would definitely be probably be Deep Red. Profondo Rosso.
Mine was going to be Torso, because I think that's a good transition from slasher to giallo.
It is. I think Deep Red is good as well, because it has those really elaborate
good.
Death scenes. Yeah,
Tenebrae would be a good one, because it's a lot like a slasher film.
That's what I was going to say. Tenebrae would be a good one. Because that's
Blade in the Dark.
And if you're a fan of the likes of Crinoline Head or Last Slumber Party, then maybe try Eyeball.
Yes.
Fatal Frames.
Fatal Frames is probably the closest giallo to Crinoline Head. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
But God, I love Fatal Frames.
I
wouldn't start with that.
But no, I suppose anything by Dario Argento's from his 70s, late 60s, 70s catalog.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or Sergio Martino.
Yeah, Sergio Martino.
But I reckon
there is a lot, as he says, though. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think if you go for the, it's like Deep Red or Tenebrae, would be good starting points, because then you can actually see how they influenced the slasher, and how, in fact, actually Tenebrae, I think you've spoken about this before, haven't we, was actually almost an answer by Dario Argento to the American slasher. Wasn't it, in a lot of ways?
Yeah.
So, and it probably only got made because of the popularity of the slasher movies in Italy, I imagine. Well, hopefully that gives you a few. You know, write back and let us know what you think of them, because it'd be interesting to hear if you're coming to it as a virgin, as it were.
Yeah. I wouldn't start with Death's Laid an Egg, though.
No. Maybe not. Move on to that one.
But if you haven't seen Bay of Blood, you should really watch it. I mean, I don't know if I necessarily consider it a giallo, but I mean, it's Italian and it's very good.
Yes.
Yes.
To me, it's just an all-out slasher movie, or a proto-slasher.
Or stage fright, if you kind of want to make a good transition, is a good transition film.
Yeah, that's a very good suggestion as well.
Yeah. Okay,
cool.
That's me.
Excellent. Okay, well, Joseph, do you want to go next?
Yeah, this is from Soren from Denmark. He writes in and says, "Hello, guys. A belated happy Halloween to you all. It was a pleasure to hear you cover Halloween 4 and 5 in the previous podcast, and I'm very much looking forward to the day, perhaps next year, when you cover Halloween H2O. To me, Halloween H2O is the final chapter in what I consider the canon of Halloween films, including the original film and its first sequel. Whenever I can, I try to watch these films back-to-back on Halloween night. They make a terrific trilogy. I never really warmed to the other films in the franchise, and I especially hate Halloween Resurrection, so I just ignore it. I know you guys seem to agree with each other that John Carpenter made a mistake when he turned Laurie and Michael into brother and sister in Halloween 2, and that it makes Michael less scary because it explains why he targeted her.
I'm not sure I agree, if only because it was never explained in the first place why Michael killed his sister or why he would come back for Lori years later. There's no motive either way. There's never anything revealed about Michael's backstory which explains why he does what he does, unlike a certain remake which shall remain nameless. And that, to me, still makes him a really scary figure. Anyway, a Halloween-related question. Excluding Halloween and Halloween 2, what is your favorite Jamie Lee Curtis slasher? And would you include The Fog among these? And I guess I'll go ahead and answer and say, I like Prom Night a lot. What about you guys?
Terror Train.
Terror Train for me as well.
I think Prom Night for me.
Okay.
Two versus two.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider The Fog a slasher, though.
No, me either.
Myself.
Rogue Games is good, too.
Yeah, Rogue Games is a good one.
Yeah.
Perfect is good as well.
Well, that's quite a slasher movie. I kind of understand what he's saying about there's still no motive, even if Jamie Lee Curtis, Laurie's his sister, but I think my reasoning behind why I think it's scarier if she's not his sister is if you think that she's not his sister, he just saw just a random girl and just decided, I'm going to kill her. I'm going to stalk her and kill her. I think that's more frightening than he saw his second sister. I'm like, okay, I got to get her too. So, I think he's still a scary character regardless. I don't think he's... I don't think it ruins his character or any, but I just feel that the idea of him just picking a stranger, it could be anybody, and I think that's what made it scary.
Yeah. I would agree. And he says, lastly, a request, please consider a proto slasher double bill of The Spiral Staircase and Psycho. That would be fantastic. All the best, Soren.
That's good.
I don't know if we could do a double bill. Because Psycho, there's a lot to talk about with Psycho for sure.
Yeah, that would have to be its own episode, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
But Spiral Staircase would be quite a good one to do, wouldn't it?
I would love to cover Spiral Staircase.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Soren. God, it's got this... can you hear the Skype going?
Yeah, I can. It's like a train dropping out. Epic proportions,
It's just getting worse. It's getting worse.
Apologies if you're a new listener, because normally, a lot of the podcasts I listen to, Skype fucks up all the time. But we usually are quite lucky, aren't we? Today it's just been a bit of a train wreck. But thank you for persevering with this, and hopefully it's been not too distracting. But there's not much. just to illustrate a point. Yes. Yep. So, okay. Well, Eric, have you?
I just had the one to read out.
Oh, okay.
I have another one, but I'm afraid to read it. I'm afraid I'm going to cut out, but we'll give it a shot.
Okay.
Okay. It says, "Hey, Justin, Eric, Joseph, and Nathan, in order of the person most likely to drop a double entendre, can only add to the praise that has been posted before me. So enlightening, so entertaining. I've tried the other podcasts, but always return to yours, even when it means re-listening to them several times over. I have a top three idea. Favorite British horror films. I am English, and I feel the English stuff, especially in the 60s and 70s, has a certain scuzzy sensibility that I really love and reminds me of the films they used to put on late-night telly in the early 80s. And he lists my top three is number one, Dead of Night from 1945, number two, Deathline, aka Raw Meat, and number three, Frightmare. Like the slashers that cover, it is often more about nostalgia than quality. Yes, I'm talking to you, the Medusa Touch. Another top three idea would be best stories with a horror anthology. My top three would be the Christmas Joan Collins story with Tales from the Crypt, the Asian Cult story from VHS 2, and the Ventriloquist Dummy story from Dead by Night. Also, when listening to your Black Christmas episode, you mentioned that it was adapted from a play called Nine Girls, and I remember looking into it and finding a movie from 1944 that was a direct adaptation called Nine Girls. Obviously, it is described as a B-movie whodunit set as a group of sorority girls vacation in the mountain. Plot centers a hated girl who is murdered, and then one of her sorority sisters turns detective to find the killer. Couldn't find a trailer or copy, but clearly sounds like a proto-slasher or giallo. Could this be the first slasher film? I hope you have better luck finding a copy than I did. One last request. For Christmas, I've asked Santa if we could cover another Christmas slasher or two. Personally, would love Silent Night, Deadly Night, and Don't Open Till Christmas. It may go on for more than other podcasts, but I've always admired your length. And as always, it's the girth that counts.
Hold on, let me just...
No, please! Oh, your hand!
Sorry.
He says, cheers, and please keep coming. Please, please, please. Spencer Hafren. Also, he has a P.S. It is a little late, but I just met Tom Hanks. I photographed him for a magazine, and I mentioned the He Knows You're Alone episode to him. And he told me that he got paid $800 for it, and it was his way of getting the SAG card. He said it was fun, and he remembers it with fondness.
Oh, wow.
Also, he's
cool.
That's awesome.
We were mentioned to Tom Hanks. Wow. Interesting.
I know.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom, if you listen, we'll do an interview, please.
Yeah.
Please, please.
Yes, we'll make room for you, Tom. Mm. Won't we, Eric? So,
yourself, you know, he's not my type, love.
But no, well, I like the idea of doing top three British films because we're gonna have to think of some more top threes because we are running out or we're in danger of repeating ourselves. But
Nathan, what was the one you came up with at Greg's the other night? You had a really good idea.
Oh God. I did, didn't I? It was an awesome idea, yeah, and I can't remember it.
It was a great idea. Yeah. I'll just have to remember that.
Well, if you remember it by next time.
Think about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that feedback. And if you photograph Tom again, then, send him our way. I've got another one here, and this is from Terry in Belgium. And he says, hello, Justin, Eric, Nathan, and Joseph. I know it's been a while since I wrote to you, but I always listen to your awesome podcast religiously, believe me. I think you are very generous in term of length. So here we go, it's another. Most of the time, your podcast lasts more than 2 hours, and from time to time, interviews can be heard, which is great. Your quiz is really difficult, however. I sometimes find the good answers, which is quite surprising. I mean, I'm like you guys, a big slash. But I find it difficult to find answers to questions like what was the name of the band which played in House on Sorority Row, early 80s version, or from which film does this quote belong, and so on. Justin said he kept his dignity when he lost the quiz. You're a good sport, Justin. Yes. Eric always makes me laugh.
Yeah, but
he tries to get some points. Excuse me, Eric.
Tries to what?
If you don't interrupt me, then I could get to it. He says, Eric always makes me laugh when he tries to get some points when he knows he is wrong. Oh. And he, sorry about Skype doing the thing there. When he pretends he's wrong and then pretends that Justin bullies him. I like this kind of childish behaviour because, of course, it's just for fun and proves that horror movie fans did not take themselves too seriously. So there you are, Eric. That's a backhanded compliment if ever I heard one.
Yes.
My girlfriend does not understand my liking for the horror genre. She thinks I'm kind of mad, in inverted commas, to appreciate movies like The Thing, Carpenter's version, Zombie, Romero. She made me remove all of my horror movie posters I had. God, can you imagine that? God. And he goes on to say, what would your reaction be if your boyfriend or girlfriend for Joseph would ask you to do this? Now something less personal. No, sorry, that's the next bit. So what would you do have you ever had anyone try and get you to take them down, Eric?
Nope.
No?
I have a queue of people asking me to take them down.
No, but if you... Yes. Horror movie posters up in the house. You don't?
No, I've never had that, no.
Okay. What about you, Nathan?
I would tell them no, definitely.
I don't have any horror movie posters hanging up right now, but... You know, I mean, if I did, no.
Well, we just had some friends came down for Halloween, and I've got the room I'm doing the podcast in, which is kind of covered in posters and stuff. And she called it, we set up a camp bed in here, and she called it the horror room. And so, horrible posters, but right opposite her bed was the Mutilator poster. So, but she took it in good sport. So.
Now, Justin, you have a billion posters, so do you alternate them out? Because you can't have enough room for all of them.
Yes, no, I do alternate them out. I've got them all in kind of plastic bag, you know, those kind of baggy things, whatever, with
trousers?
A card behind them. Yeah, trousers. Put them all in, roll them up and put them in trousers. Okay. But, yeah, I at the moment, I've basically... Oh, God, well, the Skype remix.
I love the Skype stuff. It's funny.
Oh, my God. It's like being in a 90s pop video, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. But slightly less glamorous. But yeah, no, I do alternate them. I've got this. I'm allowed one sheet by the bottom of the stairs, and I've got Trog in there at the moment. So, but I'm gonna alternate anyway. I'm rambling, so I'll just go on to more of Terry's email. Oh, for goodness sake! In your last podcast, Candyman, during the last scene movie section, Eric said he watched two Jean Roland movies, and I have to say, I did not expect Eric or the other three of you to know him. I write that because I thought Jean Roland was only known in France and Belgium, so it's a good surprise to me because his films are quite strange, weird, surreal, and atmospheric. His films are not for everyone, that is for sure. I mean, you have to be open-minded and open to slow-paced movies. But do not expect a lot of action and gore. It's all about atmosphere. So, you know, because Eric, you were talking about that, weren't you? So,
yeah, I do. I love. I've only seen the tip of the iceberg in terms of his movies, but I do like them. Yeah.
Yes. So you're open-minded and slow. I mean, sorry, slow-paced. Sorry, I misread that bit. Sorry. Open-minded.
I don't want to be the Jan Brady.
You are the Jan Brady. You'll always be the Jan Brady, Eric. Get over yourself. I went to London and bought four DVDs, which are Phenomena, Argento, the Arrow video release, which looks stunning, especially with a generous amount of bonus materials, the Slayer, the Beyond Terror release, but there is no bonus material. And by the look of the DVD cover, I do not expect a good picture quality. Pranks, the same as Slayer, Beyond Terror release, and also Don't Torture a Duckling, outstanding Jalo from Fulci, Shameless Screen Entertainment release, minus bonus materials. He just goes on to say, I want. But we were in London only for 2 days, and in the centre of London, I could not find any DVDs. Rather disappointing. So, what are the what's your latest purchases?
There was a sale on Arrow, and I just got their Blu-rays of Lisa and the Devil and Deep Red. Actually, so they're my latest.
Okay. What about you, Nathan and Joseph? Have you been buying anything, or have you been baby Jesusing?
I haven't either.
I haven't bought anything in a while. I've been spending all my money on basically living and cars and the movie. So
yeah, well, fair enough.
No movie buying for me. Sorry.
Yeah. I haven't bought a lot recently, but I did buy. What did I buy recently? I bought The Woman in Black Blu-ray because that was like £4. In HMV.
The new one with Daniel Radcliffe.
Yes. Oh. Well, I thought it's only £4, so
I thought it was quite entertaining. I mean, I think we both have issues with that final 30 seconds, but other than that, I thought it was pretty decent.
Yeah,
I did get four Blu-rays in the mail, and they all say please send to Justin.
Yeah, we're all
excellent commentary on Night Train to Terror.
When are we getting our Blu-rays? Do you know?
I don't know. I haven't heard from Ryan in a while. And what is that?
Who's slapping? Who's smacking?
I think it must be Eric.
No, yeah. It must be you, Nathan. It wasn't me. This is the sound of me slapping my buttocks.
This is the sound of one of the weirdest episodes ever.
I think it is.
It's going to be a classic.
Oh my god! I have to lift that little sound clip there to put at the end. This is going to be a clack 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 classic. Right,
that's awesome. I just like
drinking tumor or something can give you a heart attack. Clack, you ought to know by now.
Okay, what music? What songs do kind of ride on time or something?
Yeah, something like that.
That's kind of rubbish. But
Billy Joel, that's what it was.
It's never going to end, is it? Right, okay. Sorry, back to Terry's email. The last slasher home invasion survival movies I saw, You Are Next, a pretty fun home invasion survival movie and quite violent for a movie scene at the cinema. And just like Justin said, the synthesizer music was pretty good and totally 80s. There was some black humour throughout the movie, but it was not too much. I mean, the black humour was well balanced with some more serious scenes. The Purge, a very, very bad movie. They're and stupid. The directing, I haven't seen it yet, was really poor.
I mean,
the house
as well.
Is huge, and I expected the director to use all the rooms of the house, its architecture, you know. The house space could have been used in a clever way, Carpenter style, like the Assault. So is he fair to say that The Purge is a turd?
No, I like The Purge better than Your Next.
Okay.
Well, I didn't like it better than Your Next, but I think that The Purge is very unfairly hated. Like, so many people hate that movie, and I don't get it.
I think The Purge is kind of original in where it goes at the end, whereas, you know, Your Next is become under fire for ripping off a movie called Below Utopia, a.k.a. Body Count, with Ice-T and Alyssa Milano from the 90s. Almost shot for shot, everyone's pointing out that Your Next is like pretty much the same movie. So there you go.
Interesting. Right. Well,
except people have actually seen Your Next.
Yeah,
that's the difference.
I wish I could see Alyssa Milano, but you know what can you do?
Right. And just to finish off the email, it says Terry says, "I saw these two movies at cinema. Every time a horror movie benefits of a cinema release, I watch it at the theater. I hope you're going to receive a lot of feedback this time, guys, because you surely deserve a lot of reactions." Well, Eric does. I'm sure he gets a lot of reactions. I can understand the taste of bitterness when you get no feedback at all. So, yeah, you can feel our pain. And I really hope that Joseph and Nathan will get the money they need to direct their And I wish you luck, guys. Finally, he says, not horror related, but I do not know if you know the film Control. Justin, but when I see the kind of bands you like, especially Season of Banshees, you might like this movie. A film from Anton Corbin, the U2 photographer, is not about Joy Division, but more about Ian Curtis. Excellent movie. Believe me, Justin. I believe you, Terry. I keep on.
I haven't seen it, guys. It's brilliant. Have you not seen it, Justin?
Control.
Yeah.
No, is that the one with what's his name? Sam, the guy who plays in Curtis.
Sam Riley. Yeah.
Yes. No, I have seen it. No, it's good.
Yeah.
Very good film. Yeah. Excellent.
Very good. Yeah.
Right. Well.
I love Joy Division, by the way.
Yes, me too.
So do I.
Love will tear us apart again.
Well, and I think this podcast is going to tear us apart.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you
might want to announce the next movie before it just goes kaput completely.
Yes. this mega mix is coming to an end, which is a shame because we were so enjoying talking about the films, but maybe not the. It's never been this bad before, is it?
No, this is the worst it's ever been.
I mean, the only good thing is it's not dropping out. We're not losing people being flung off the calls, but this is the worst it's ever been. So hopefully when we come back in 2 weeks' time, we'll be back to we'll be back to normal. Obviously Eric as normal as can be, but for goodness sake. Right, okay. Anyway, quickly, next time we are going to go on to a listener pick, Tony Hartman was kind enough to pledge to the night before Easter, and he chose Twisted Nightmare from 1987. So it's a film that I've actually got the Dutch VHS, but I haven't watched it for years and years and years. And actually, I think talking of posters, I bought the one sheet for it in Hollywood last time I was there. Yes. I was going to give up, but anyway, that's coming up next time. So, oh blimey, it's never ending, isn't it?
Wow!
But, wow! So if you've managed to get through that episode, you can get through anything. But at least the interview with Tommy Fairclough will be remix-free, won't it, hopefully? Because I'll slip it in at a later...
I'll be slipping it in later. Yeah.
Yes. I think after that, we just need a little bit...
Sorry.
Don't apologise. Tom, you better pump the organ today.
Yes, we're all off to pump the organ to try and get over this this episode. But thank you for listening. Any last words for our dear listeners?
Goodbye.
Bye.
Yeah.
Yes.
Goodbye, my Coney Island baby.
What are we playing out with?
This is a music video that was after the credits. Crinolinhead. I don't remember the group, but it's kind of a punk rock number.
Okay.
Titwheel, yeah.
Right.
Titwheel.
Okay. Titwheel.
Titmouse.
I can't say titmouse without giggling like a girl.
Right.
Yeah,
are we going to
well done.
Should we play? What I'll probably do is lay this over the end because otherwise it'll just do what it's been doing. So, yeah. So. Thank you for listening, and hopefully the Skype issues will not continue at the Hysteria Continues next time on episode 71.
Bye.
Oh, my God. Right. Okay.
It's going to be a classic.